The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
This episode of Thinking Outside the Long Box was brought to us by our brilliant Patreon supporters, Doyle, Derek, Ryan, and Steve. Thank you for helping us harness the power of the night.
Because sometimes it gets real sexual about Ashton. Sometimes it gets real sexual about not my son.
Live from the hottest basement on the face of the earth, because we all have our dicks hanging out, you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box with Juan, John, and Gabe, with special guests Steve and Tim.
Only one is a supporter.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. The bells on bobtail ring, they make our spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Damn it, I was 1 second too slow.
Oh, man.
Oh, we'll record
hey
now.
Everybody, welcome to episode 75 of
76.
That's what I said, of Thinking Outside the Long Box. I'm Gabe.
I'm Juan.
I'm Tim.
I'm Steven.
I'm Steven.
So proper.
Some I love
well. I'm done with this.
just the way
welcome,
you said.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to Thinking Outside the Long Box on WKXPN NPR affiliate. I'm Steven, your host. We'll be talking about wieners.
isn't that right, Mr. Scream?
Not going to lie. That sounds like a show I'd listen to.
Much has been said about the phallic arts throughout time. However,
there's phallic arts?
Dude, could you imagine an NPR show that was just about dicks? It'd be amazing. It'd be like super
Is that proper guy talking about fucking coming?
the art of helicoptering your penis.
Some say that the canonical answer is a counterclockwise. However, new scholars believe that a clockwise sect had developed late in the 18th century due to the size of French penises.
Scientific evidence has recently come forth that when you are below the equator, the polar opposite is true to swing it clockwise.
When you're below the equator, women actually prefer smaller dicks.
No, they just spin the other way.
Oh, shit. Wait, sounds why like are we
below
here?
The equator?
Where do they like the smallest ones? I want to go there.
Apparently, your wife.
Oh, so hey. That's valid. She said it was a good size. Oh, man. Well, this got off to an interesting start.
These never go the way we plan them.
So we haven't started off with, like, a sex thing for a little bit.
I was just talking about that last night.
I know. It's been, like, I think, like,
some
five
drunk
or six.
People asked me about our podcast, so.
That's. You're like, you would well, like it right now. When you're sober, you're going to fucking hate it.
I wish you were drunk.
About comic books, and she's like, meh. And I was like, movies? TV shows? She's like, yes.
Wieners?
And I was like, dildos? And she's like, yeah.
I love those.
I have a contribution to this first segment that she told me about.
Oh, nice. Well, I'm going to do Tim's real quick. Oh,
okay. God. Wow, then we need to go away.
I'm going
to
do Tim's real quick.
Don't stop.
So Tim sent us the video.
You don't helicopter when it's inside. Jesus.
That's how small it is.
Do we call that a whirly bird when it's smaller? I don't know. So Tim sent us the video of the climbing wall.
And there was a lot of
wall with just like
a lot of sexy women climbing that climbing wall.
I know, just like they're like, this is the biggest one I've ever seen.
Wait. So I haven't seen this. So is it the climbing wall where it's just a bunch of open holes and you get like two dildos and you have to put the dildos in the wall as you climb?
No, that sounds hard.
It's simply a wall of dildos.
It's like a wall. And it's not just dildos, though.
It's like tits and like asses.
And like straight up like spread eagle legs.
I've had that dream. That's a fucking horrible dream.
Yeah, that sounds nightmarish.
They were all my dad's.
Oh, I didn't even know that they were your dad's.
That was weird.
Let's not talk about my uncomfortable youth. That's not true. My dad's a saint.
We're talking about the movie It.
Oh. Oh, man. Are you still a good girl, Steve?
Sometimes I worry, baby.
Sometimes I worry about you, Steve.
Oh, that's funny. It was weird, though.
I feel like I was like,
what's this? And I was like, oh, wow, and that's weird.
It's got mood lighting. I thought that was really weird because I feel like climbing a wall in the dark seems dangerous.
Podcasting off my conversations. Is there music? What's the like?
And we're back.
Oh man, but it has mood lighting, and I thought, wow, that seems dangerous and awkward.
It's classy.
Everyone was having fun though. Everybody's smiling and laughing.
There's like the one like obvious scene where like the hot chick is like. Dick by both hands.
And then the one swinging guy that's from like, it. Pull myself up by tits. Like.
Sally, we've told you 9 times you are not to climb this wall orally.
Oh, that would be painful.
Hey, her explosive jump is something to behold. Christ Jesus, those were 6 feet apart.
I feel like Gabe's not awake yet.
He's still a little residual weeded from last night.
Last night? You guys didn't get stoned before this?
No.
Oh, neither did I.
Oh, I'll be back.
So the drunk lady last night, we were talking about dildos because we were talking about our show. She's like, I just read about how when your spouse dies or your significant other, you can burn them and put ashes in a glass dildo. And so you get this momentous giant glass dildo filled with your loved one's ashes. She's like, what the fuck? Why would I want to do that?
Why? That's horrible.
I said, maybe she's like 90 and it's a mantelpiece.
Something you don't now see. So here's the deal, though. Do they do like a life cast of it, or are you just getting like a random dildo with?
I think it's just a random shape, but the ashes are the important part. They just go in the center, and it's glass, so you can see the ashes.
Yeah, because you're not going to burn the ashes with the glass when you like melt it. So oh, you just have it mixed crazy. In.
That
there.
Would be weird.
Like all of that Turn is weird.
I mean, I would expect it just to be like a vein in.
It's so veiny.
Well, just the central vein, not the that supporting my... veins, the delivery vein, as one might say.
That was my husband's favorite vein.
You can make pencils out of the dead.
I've seen that.
What?
You haven't heard of that?
No.
Yeah, you get cremated and somebody will make you pencils of your dead one. They literally like make the lead out of the crushed ashes of the person. Well, I mean, you put what in there you like. But yeah, and then you get a pencil of, you know, whomever they were.
But like eventually you have to sharpen the pencil and you're just getting rid of your loved
one.
Sure.
I mean, presumably that's the price of using a pencil.
I mean, it seems like such a pointless thing because either you don't want to use the pencil because
I believe it's symbolic.
Is it symbology?
Symbolism?
Maybe symbology. He died and he was a nerd.
Maybe you're a writer.
Put me in these pocket protectors.
Yeah, maybe he's a writer.
That's kind of cool.
Maybe it's a Leaves of Grass type of thing.
Maybe he liked wood.
You should have seen her.
It always comes right back to Dick.
Always.
Oh, man.
So are we all bringing our disgusting porn things to the conversation today to open this?
I believe that's usually what we do.
So occasionally, like many red-blooded Americans... Or really anyone ever was on Pornhub.
Oh, yeah.
And on Pornhub, I was digging around, kind of like I do in Wikipedia, where you just jump from thing to thing to thing.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
Oh, it's the best idea.
It's a rabbit hole.
It is the deepest rabbit hole. Now, I'm a denizen of the internet.
How did I start learning about Nazis?
I've been around since, you know, the time when it was acoustic couple modems and shit. So I've seen lots of things. Goatee, Tub Girl, these are well known to me.
Right.
No longer shocking. I saw something yesterday that I was legitimately uncomfortable and disgusted by, and it has been a long time since that has happened. It is a 26-minute long video, so not just a short clip, of a man, fairly chubby. I'm waiting for people to leave the room because I feel bad about bringing this even up. It is a video of a man fucking a foot-tall doll where it's a scaled-down anime doll that's about a foot long. But the worst part about it is that it's made out of silicone, and so the womb to basically sternum area is semi-transparent, and there are at least 16 cum shots where it's just this tentacle, but not tentacle since it's a dude's wang, coming inside of these what are effectively child babies. They're not babies, but they're that size, but they look like anime chicks, so they're too young probably. It is unfucking comfortable, and holy Jesus.
And then, and then he came.
I did not expect that.
I just couldn't stop what I was doing.
Oh, man.
It's like autopilot.
Is that what you were telling me about?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I wanted to show you, but I couldn't put it on my phone. I'm like, there's no way.
Because, like, I really don't want the NSA to come to my house.
Like, I mean, they're just dolls. Like, think about a real doll just scaled down to a foot. Like, a real doll, fine, I get it. It's a big thing. Whatever, they got posable bones. You know, they're the Cadillac of things you fuck. I'm all right with that. But scaled down baby-sized versions of adult things that are clear and get bulgy?
Ugh.
And then, like, you can see the guy get to where he's going inside of it, and it just juices outside like every bad erotic anime you've ever seen.
That's it's outside.
Oh, dude.
I feel like the cleanup on such
it's just
thing
like an orange
disgusting.
Juicer, man.
I would just put it in. They probably can flip it inside out and just throw it in the dishwasher.
That's not any I just use a bottle cleaner.
Oh, wow.
That's too much work.
I just throw it away, buy a new one. That's what he did.
Just come the old-fashioned way on the table or something. I mean, that's fucking too much work.
Lick it up or whatever.
Oh good your morning, sister's Bailey. Behind you.
Kids are awake.
Wow.
This is a conversation you wanted to wake up to, wasn't it?
I read comic books. So, that was disturbing.
Hello. Yeah, that was gross.
That was gross.
Sorry. Yeah. Listen, it got in my mind and I felt the need to poison other minds with it. Just you think it's bad, my description? Just wait till you see it online because I know y'all are going to go see it because how can you not now?
Definitely somebody that listens to the show.
Somebody's
is
already
look that
like
up.
Paused the show. Yeah. Like, oh, fuck yeah. That's what I've been looking for.
Oh, that stuff's on Pornhub now?
Where do I get these? That was the other thing. That's the thing that surprises
it's fake,
me
bro.
On that site from time to this. There was nothing fake about this.
No, I mean, the doll is fake.
Oh,
so
yes. The doll is fake. Yeah, well, that's what I tried to tell myself, but part of your brain is like, no. Mm-mm. There are many holes like that. Like most of it's standard, you know, I fucked my brother because apparently that's what's on there now. And then you start clicking around and you're like, are you allowed to host? It's like when you're going through Netflix and the human centipede shows up and you're like, this shouldn't be – there should be a gate before this, something,
like
somewhere.
You shouldn't be able to just like start this up. No matter what.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's just one of those you're like, this is – I don't believe in control and a whole lot of things, but occasionally I'm just like
– I should definitely have to put in a password to see this.
Yes. This should have been a – are you sure? I mean I would have clicked yes, but at least I could have braced myself first.
Oh, this has got a warning.
Awesome. I haven't seen a warning on the internet I took seriously in like, I don't know, 15 years.
Well, basically, when it started saying, are you over the age of 18? I've been clicking yes since I was like 13.
Oh, well, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's accurate.
I was born in 1955.
Like, what date puts me before? Oh, man. Well, do we have things, actual things to talk about?
I have a lot of TV shows.
Juan has been very complaining to me that I don't talk enough about the stuff that we're supposed to talk about, even though That's not how the conversation went. I didn't talk about anything. I had all these notes. So, Juan, what do you have today?
I don't have any notes.
What did you bring
to the
table?
I'm just kidding.
I hate you so much.
I'm just kidding. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came back. So, it's in its fifth season, I think. Fourth or fifth season, one
accurate.
Of the two.
Yeah.
And we talked about it before, how it was about to be canceled, and then the parent company was like, no, you can't cancel that show, which was weird that the big company would step in and be like, nah, we're keeping it.
Right.
Because the network was about to take it off their TV show or their channel. But it's weird because I think the Ghost Rider framework last season was like the fucking best season they had. I loved everything that happened with the Ghost Rider, and then the framework where they're in an altered reality and it's not really real, and it's fucking cool.
Yeah.
And then they changed it again, And I don't know if you'll watch, so, but they're in space in the future, and the fucking Earth is blown up, and some statue thing like sent them there, and they have no idea where they're at or what's going on, and it's interesting. I like S.H.I.E.L.D. I like where they're going with it, and so
it's one of those shows that like when I do watch it, I watch like 12 episodes of it. I'm like, oh yeah, this is really fun, and then I just stop watching it.
Right.
Like, I do that with that and Gotham a lot, where I'll watch, like, the one whole behind season, on Gotham. And then that's it.
I'm excited for it. Their Ghost Rider, it sounds like, is going to come back again this season. So, and I like, that's, like, the best Ghost Rider that's been out there in fucking forever. So,
it's funny, Marvel announced that they're going to do a cosmic Ghost Rider. And they're like, for the first time ever, cosmic Ghost Rider. I was like, except for that run in Guardians of the Galaxy, like, where there was cosmic Ghost Rider. And Ghost Rider 2099, where there was cosmic Ghost Rider.
You're not supposed to remember that.
I know. We're supposed to have blank minds when it comes to Marvel.
Everything.
They're like, forget everything you know, because we're doing this for the first time. Like Jane Foster Thor, and like cosmic Ghost Rider.
But the ratings came out for Marvel, and it was the most watched season. It was the most watched episode since they started.
Oh, nice!
So it was 2.5 million people watched, or something like that. And the closest was the mid season premiere last year, which was 2.2, I think, million. So
was there like a fan surge that kept it from getting canceled, or was it just,
I don't know. I read an article, it was just
Disney
the
was like,
it was,
no, we
yeah,
need this for the
it
movies.
Was it was something about how because it's on, fuck, what channel is it on? I think it might be Fox. I can't remember, though. But the station was like, we want to cancel the show. And Disney was like, no, you can't cancel
it. I think that's fantastic, though, because if you look at how many, you know, series, you know, famously Firefly, would have gone on to be just monstrously popular, that, like, these networks are just like, no, one season, you're done, out, and they cut it. I think that's actually a good maneuver to just be like, no, let this run for a season or two. You know, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't, but you need longer than the awkward first season of every show you've ever seen, where you're like, Star Trek to the Next Generation is a great show. Watch the first season and be like, this would have gotten chopped today. And then you would have missed, you know, the next 9 seasons of great television.
Constantine's the same way.
Exactly.
They weren't getting like the kind of ratings that they wanted, and they'd made a decision to cancel the show like halfway through the first season. Like,
yep.
They did the same thing with Firefly.
And now when it pops up on the other shows, it's like the best rated shows of those other shows.
Exactly. Because people just want more of it.
So stupid.
It's weird. It's weird because Disney has like such a huge like presence. They can just say, nah, you're not canceling this show. Like that idea, like you said, is probably a good thing, to be able to say, let's give this a little bit. Because I think that's why HBO is so successful with a lot of their TV shows. Like a show like Deadwood, they're like, we're going to tell this story, even if it takes like 5 seasons.
Yeah.
Or the Wire, we're going to tell this story. You know, and then The Wire was so popular, they're like, oh, let's give it an extra season. It's like, it was terrible. You should have just stuck with the total story and left it there. But, you know, they
I don't know
say
if it has to do with the movies, because I read another article that said that, because people always ask, I can't remember the actor's name now, Greg, the guy who plays Coulson.
Yeah.
They always ask him, when are they going to find out that you're fucking alive? Like, because he was the linchpin of bringing the Avengers back together, spawning them. And it was not, now he's vanished and he's alive, but they don't know he's alive. And they're always, and his answer was like, I think it's a thing of the, I don't think they'll ever know.
Well, they can't know he's alive. They'll undo that. Well, you pull that later on when you need to undo the Avengers, that Coulson's alive and your getting together was actually completely factious and made up by.
Right.
Fury, and then you're going to lose trust in Fury, and then, you know, move along.
I don't think any of them really trust Fury.
Well, no, you shouldn't.
You can't trust a dude in one eye?
No, he's just saying you can't trust a dude that's black.
I did not say that. I'm sorry. Motherfucker. <He's> like,
the aggravated utterance does not support that claim.
We just not.
The opinions expressed on the show are nobody's opinions and should not be taken seriously ever.
That's at the end of the show every time.
I know,
so
I'm just
we're
saying.
Good. I thought it was interesting though. It was the most popular rated show they've had in a long time, and the past season was fucking amazing. I like the different. It's not just a procedural. You know, even though it deals with superpowered people, it's not a procedural. Like there's a villain every episode, a new right. You know, a new monster of the day or whatever you want to call it. So, I love that it's different.
That's cool. Sticking with Marvel. Giant trailer dropped this week.
Oh, yes.
Avengers Infinity War featuring Pink Thanos.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited. John Goodman is Thanos.
Hey, John Goodman looks good, so.
I would love a John Goodman Thanos. But does not look like Josh Brolin anymore.
So it looks awesome.
Yeah.
Other than
Pink Thanos.
Pink Thanos.
Yeah, but I can get past that for right now.
Like, I probably can, too. It's just, it's one of those hilarious things where, like, I shit on, like, Sony and I shit on, what's the other
Everything
one?
Everything before you like
Fox.
DC?
Yeah.
No, like Fox. No, like the...
Everything before you like it?
Well, yeah, that's true. But, like, the other side of Marvel, the Marvel that's not being produced like by Marvel, like the Sony and the Fox.
Oh, you mean the entities, right, but not right, by right. Marvel yeah. Studios.
Like the Spider-Man movies, like the first two were pretty good, but like the other ones have been like, eh.
I'm sorry,
okay.
Which two?
The Sam Raimi ones, the first two.
You are objectively wrong.
Oh, whatever.
I like the first two.
Exactly.
The third one went off the rails a little bit, but it was still okay.
Yeah, when Spider-Man's doing like his hipster
his dance.
Fucking dance.
I am
yeah.
in a den of heathens.
Well, yeah.
Fucking buy some you, taste.
Yeah. You can't
Maybe
buy
Maybe some
taste.
Standards?
Nope.
I.
Dude, you literally just talked about a dude that fucks
That's
dolls.
True. And yeah. you watched it.
That's a standard. A deep standard. It had originality. It had performance. I believed what was happening on screen.
Because it was disturbing as fuck.
On the other hand, I was buying nothing that Tobey Maguire was doing. But this is old hat. I'll stop, sir.
No, but...
I think it broke the record for how many views it had on YouTube.
So the...
In 3
That's
days,
the YouTube bell.
In 3 days, it had more views than, like, since the Justice League trailer has been out.
Yeah.
Sorry, DC guys. The truth is
Michael
the truth.
Kirk.
So the Ivan Ooze apocalypse that we all made fun of, I'm going to be very forward in saying I'm more than willing to make fun of the Marvel-produced Pink Thanos, because that also looks like... a fucking Power Rangers villain, and
here's the thing, though,
ridiculous
for
and hilarious.
For the most people who are going to watch it, is I didn't even notice. Like, I don't know anything about Thanos. I don't read anything about Thanos. I just saw fucking Thanos. You know, we've seen little tiny glimpses of him through the whole arc that they're doing.
Right, and he's purple in him, and I feel
for
like,
the most part.
And
yeah,
I
yeah,
feel
yeah.
like this is either going to be some weird, like somebody's like, oh, it's the first time you've seen him not in outer space.
That was
the series.
So, that's exactly what I was thinking. Every time we've seen him, it's been dark and it's been kind of in these weird settings, and now he's out in the light. I didn't even pay attention to it because I don't know anything about Thanos.
And I feel like when they did Apocalypse, when the movie came out, he looked significantly better in the movie.
Well, they had come out and admitted that was like test footage that they were scrambling to get a trailer.
And I feel like that's kind of what's happening with this too, is that they just haven't done quite enough color balancing on it, and they're like, holy shit, we said this trailer is coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, people were like, oh, Justice League, come on, Marvel, put out a fucking trailer. Yeah, bring me back to happy.
Because I think if you watch the leaked San Diego Comic-Con trailer and this one back-to-back, Thanos is also pink in that one.
Yeah.
So they probably literally just reused like older footage because they're like, yeah, we don't really want to show too much.
Yeah.
I mean, I can get that.
Have any of you guys seen Justice League yet?
I have.
No.
I haven't finished it yet.
I have not watched it.
It's good.
I'm afraid to watch it.
It's good. It's entertaining. But like any superhero movie, it's not some fucking cinema work of art. Like, don't expect Citizen
Civil War
Kane.
Was a fucking work of art.
No, it was not. It was just a movie.
It's superheroes. Don't expect Citizen Kane. Just be entertained that Aquaman's kicking ass and there's, like, boxes that people got to get. I don't fucking know. I'm not a DC guy. I was entertained. And as, like...
Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
There's a good chance I'm not going to be entertained.
No, I'll probably be with Tim. I enjoyed everything I have. I haven't finished it yet.
There are some comedy bits in the movie that seem horribly forced, but it's pretty obvious that where the reshoots are in the movie.
Yeah.
So
I just the Steppenwolf and the CGI just fucking destroys me. I can't do it.
That's genuinely one of the few problems I have with Wonder Woman, is that the CGI in it is just trash. Mm-hmm.
And but you don't get a ton of it in Wonder Woman until like the very end.
Yeah, and by then you're so invested in the movie that it's not like a huge deal. You're like, oh, that villain looks like fucking garbage.
I don't understand why they don't do, like, find a giant fucking dude to play Steppenwolf and put him in something, you know? Yeah. It's weird to me.
Go grab the guy from Game of Thrones who's like 8 foot tall.
Yeah.
I watched that dude crush
I don't understand why you'd rather pay the millions to make something fake that looks completely fake. Like, it doesn't look real. It's just weird.
It is.
Pay a dude $1 million to fucking get in a suit.
Probably cheaper. It'd probably be cheaper to pay an actor to do that than to make it out of CGI. I don't know. But anyway, Infinity War trailer looks really good.
Definitely.
Like, totally. I'm excited to see it.
I'm all in.
Scruffy looking Captain America. That was exciting. Mm.
Make this man a shield. It's like, oh, that's cool.
Where you see, they
have that stuff there.
Spider-Man get his Spidey sense.
Oh, like, that was really cool. His hair raising.
So good.
I was like, it's going to know stuff before it happens now.
I think that's the best part of a lot of those
Marvel
things.
I feel like he hit puberty or something.
Are those tiny little... Like,
I remember reading that.
Exactly. Right? There's a lot of just those little, and it makes you feel really good. And I think the DC movies lack that completely. They're just like, hey, guess what? Guess what? We're going to show you that thing that should make you feel that way. And we're going to make a real big fucking point about it. And the point is, you just slip it in there. You don't just build a whole movie and be like, guess what, guys? He's Batman.
Exactly.
I don't know if you knew, but yeah.
Also, Doomsday.
Mind's blown.
I think another part of the problem is that people tend to be less familiar with the broader scope of DC's characters. Mm. Because DC threw so much into Batman and Superman, because they were so immensely popular, like even their bigger characters like The Flash or Green Arrow and stuff, people aren't super familiar
with
him. But
what do you know about Batman? He never had his own, in this universe, I mean, he never had his own singular movie either.
No, that's what I'm saying. I mean in the comic book realm. Oh, okay. Like, when people are reading comic books, they know about Batman and Superman, but in Marvel, a lot of people know about, like, a broader scope because so many of the books are team-based.
Right.
Yeah. Like, if you know about the X-Men, you know about, like, 16 characters. Right. If you know about the Avengers, you know about 438 characters. Like, you know, they've taken, like, their singular titles, right, like Black Panther, Captain America, whatever, and put them into these team books, whereas in DC, there was Super Friends and Justice League. And like Super Friends, there was Batman and Superman and everybody else. You know, it wasn't ever like the most, you know, important, amazing thing, you know?
Right.
Hi. So it's one of those things where I feel like the familiarity with the characters
goes a long way.
Yeah, isn't as great when it comes to DC. So as a consequence, when they're trying to put out a Justice League movie, people just off the cuff aren't familiar with Flash, Cyborg.
Who the hell is Cyborg?
Well, and I don't know why I should care about these people. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, we love Wonder Woman now because we've seen her outside of the team.
Right.
You know?
And Marvel did a really good job of like releasing like Iron Man and then the Hulk,
right,
and then this, and then building into the Avengers before they threw them all together.
They did it bass backwards because they thought it would be a fast way to make money.
And
it didn't work. It's nobody.
And they have like
caved it some.
They have cut down the number of movies that they're releasing, like, significantly.
In DC?
Yeah.
We still don't know if the Batman movie is actually going to happen.
Or if it's going to happen with Ben Affleck.
So that's the other thing, is you don't have committed, you know, so the film base is based around Superman and Batman.
Right.
And you don't have a commitment from the other fucking half that you're supposed to be building this franchise on.
Right.
Well, it's then they slipped the caveat into Justice League at one point where Wonder Woman or Superman, somebody says something and Batman's like, yeah, I've been fighting crime for 20 years. So by the time you watch Justice League, he's already been Batman for like two decades.
Right.
Right.
So now the, like, all the guys over at Z2 Podcast are like, oh, maybe they're going to do a Nightwing movie and Ben Affleck's going to pass the mantle or some shit like that. I'm like, I guess.
Did you just throw podcast shade?
No, I love those guys. They're my DC source because I'm not really a DC guy outside of Watchmen. Side note, HBO Watchmen series. Anyone?
That sounds exciting to me.
That would be the second time they've announced that they were going to do it, so I hope they actually come through this time.
So a slight segue into DC news. So I watched a trailer yesterday, which sounds dumb, but was so exciting. Now, to be fair, I love myself some Batman. I'm unapologetic about it.
People
it was sort of my
Batman
rebirth.
Dolls?
No, there was no Batman doll fucking. Although... a niche market that maybe isn't open. The Dark Knight!
Somebody just got body slammed.
So there is a trailer for a movie.
Where are the drugs?
Where are you? About 30 seconds. Called Batman Ninja.
Yeah.
It is an anime involving Batman, and it looks like the coolest thing on the face of the earth. I am so goddamn excited. Batman Samurai fights Batman Joker in samurai costumes.
Joker Ninja.
Joker Ninja. Like, it looks so good.
It's in my notes because I saw it yesterday too. It is genuinely one of the coolest looking animations that they've come out with. DC put out like a series of like anime style cartoons of like a bunch of the different characters. But
is that the one where it's like Catwoman's got like a whip and it's very like traditional Japanese art style?
Yes.
And then Bane is like the size of like a skyscraper.
Yes. Okay. And they've got who's the monkey guy?
Awesome.
DC's
Grodd.
Grodd.
Yeah.
Looks the coolest Grodd
has
ever looked.
Because he's like a giant gorilla in like samurai armor. It's
like
looks
Grodd
amazing.
The daimyo sounds like about the coolest thing ever.
I was going to bring it up because like it's genuinely one of the cooler looking trailers that I've seen in a little bit. And it's more interesting to me. So DC's animation series, like, and just in general, like the things that they put out animated.
They
nail it. They're like so much better than the movies. And I feel like somebody should say, hey, like what we're doing here, just do that
over
with
there.
Real people. Like, yeah. Stop making the garbage and do this. But like the animated DC stuff is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So
for sure.
I think your daughter's leaving.
Yeah. What time is it real quick?
9:20.
You want to take a little break?
Sure.
We'll take a little break.
I
want
to talk about DC afterwards still, too. So.
Yeah. We're just going to...
No. We're after the break. You're done. You should have gotten it in before that. I'm sorry.
Hello from the children of planet Earth.
Join me, Chris the Moment, on the couch to explore the mysteries, conspiracies, weird histories, the unexplained, and the strange of the Couch Potato Files. New show every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Listen live at couchpotatofiles.com.
Solo.
Solo's pretty rough.
Yeah, Solo's rough.
They eat a lot of poo in that.
Yeah.
That sounds disgusting.
It is.
We're recording.
There were some real good practical effects in that movie.
I don't know.
Much to its chagrin.
Let's keep this episode less light than the end of late. Episode 69.
Yes.
Okay, so anyway, I'm going to talk about something that wasn't on my list, but I've been trying to talk about it upstairs.
It's not on the list, so too bad. Move along.
Wait, it's about to start.
And I wanted to talk about DC still.
Go ahead, tell your story about Central LA.
So there's this show called Hood Adjacent.
Mm-hmm.
It stars this comedian whose name I can't remember because I've only seen a few episodes of it now.
Gripping.
Yeah. But he lived – so South Central
Wait,
Los
did he
Angeles,
live in South Central?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But he lived in a part of South Central that was like not as bad as like – gangster rap.
South
Central. It was adjacent.
So there were only a couple of guys up to no good?
Yeah, exactly. So he was hood adjacent. So the whole premise of the show is that he goes into like the hood, quote unquote.
Excuse me, it's the hood.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I'm not qualified to say that. I am definitely not melanin positive enough to say that.
You're Mexican, close enough.
Anyway. I also am hood adjacent. I lived in Greeley-ish.
Mm.
So he goes into like the more like quote-unquote hood parts right. of the city and, like, meets up with guys that are, like, gangsters and stuff like that and basically tries to learn the things about living in the hood that he didn't learn about by being hood adjacent. Like, he knew about them but didn't, like, really know
first-hand experience.
And the first episode, he goes to, like, this liquor store that apparently is, like, super famous.
Wake up. Sorry.
And, like, these guys show up, and they're like, why are you recording at our liquor store? Like, I mean, he straight up almost gets shot, like, episode one. I'm like, oh, this is amazing.
He learned the hood.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost immediately.
So, it's a funny show. You should watch it,
Steve. The Hood Made Manifest.
You know what? That wouldn't be on the podcast if you fucking assholes wouldn't have interrupted me constantly upstairs. So shut up, Juan.
I'm sorry, what?
Talk to me about DC.
Can't hear you. I love you.
No, you just love my doggy style.
Direct to consumer?
Whoa. When you're on all fours?
No.
Yeah, no. Yeah. You're definitely the catcher.
No. I don't know if the poodle is a move.
But you can't be on top of me. You'll crush me. You have to be the catcher.
God, I would pay money to see this. I would pay money not to see that.
I would pay money to also not see this.
To be fair, you are paying money not to see it every month.
This is true.
Oh, yeah, we should bring
you should list that as one of the perks.
We should bring up that Steven is one of our Patreon supporters. Thank you.
Steven?
I like to consider myself a patron of the arts.
Is that what this is?
This is the dark arts, bro.
Patron of penis swinging?
I mean...
From earlier.
I subscribe only to the counterclockwise method. I mean,
the circumference isn't very large, but it's still swinging, all right?
Well, sometimes it's more about the frequency, a.k.a. the number of swings per second, versus the rotation.
Yeah, it's more about RPM.
Yeah, than anything else.
It's more of a guy's maxing out at 7,000 RPM. Holy shit.
If you can't feel the breeze, then it's not doing it right.
Fucking making a little tornado.
It's said that the masters of the art could elongate themselves simply by increasing the speed, thus lengthening the stroke of their throw.
It just looks longer, like when you wave a pencil real fast.
Yeah.
No, but it's like they used to put those fucking little bands like they do on the girls.
That was the most racist thing I've ever heard.
Right under the head, bro.
No,
that's
way.
It. It's like we got to elongate the shaft.
Especially Tim.
God. It's all head.
All head. No
it's all
shaft.
Head, no shaft.
4 inches of head.
You can experience this effect if you take one sock and put it inside another sock and then swing it around your head.
Sounds terrible.
So DC.
Dick Comics.
Dick Copter? They put the best thing out last week that they had going in forever after Wonder Woman was the DC the Arrowverse crossover, which I think was much better than what's going on the big screen. And I think a lot of that, which we've already covered, is attributed because we know these people. We know we've had Arrow now for 6 seasons and Flash for 4, I think. Supergirl for 3, something like that. But that was fucking gripping. I don't know if any of you guys watch any of those shows.
It's a TV team up, right?
Correct, yeah.
That episode I saw.
So last year they did a crossover, but Supergirl wasn't really it. Like her episode in the... So that's the biggest thing. It was all... Like, this is Supergirl's episode in the crossover. It wasn't, like, a solid storyline.
Yeah.
And so it was weird. She wasn't really in it. And then each episode subsequently dealt with that team instead of the whole story. So this was more of a crossover than it was last year because it dealt with every episode was everybody dealing with everything.
And that probably has a lot to do with Supergirl moving to CW.
Right.
Yeah.
The slot that was designated for Arrow wasn't Arrow's team. It dealt with the larger story, so it helped the story. It didn't feel like 4 smaller stories built into 1 larger story. It's just a big story. But there's a lot of stuff happened in it. I mean, Barry and Iris got married. Felicity and Oliver got married last minute. And then Martin Stein died, which was fucking sad. I almost cried when that happened. It was very sad. So I don't know what's going on with Firestorm anymore, but it was awesome because again, I don't know anything about why I should care about Cyborg or the other Flash or any of those other. I don't know why I should care about them at this point.
Because they haven't shown you right. anything about them. Aside
and I'm
the
torn
little
like
bit that's in the
and,
movies.
And I'm mad because we, and when we first talked about this, why don't you use fucking Grant Gustin as the Flash? You know, he's got a giant fucking fan base already.
Money.
You know, it's.
Because if
why?
Grant Gustin
he's
is
cheap.
In a movie, then he'll have
cheap.
To be paid his movie money in all of the next
no,
season.
No, you think?
In. Oh, good lord, yeah.
I really don't think Grant Gustin seems like... Well, I don't fucking know because he's got a lot of money, so who knows. But I don't
I mean,
I don't feel like he's
anyway
that kind of
star,
kind of character.
When you make
and neither
movie
Stephen
star,
Amell
though.
Doesn't seem that way either. But
right.
you got to think about, like, that's everybody. Like, anybody in the cast of the TV show that they use in the movie, they have to up their pay in the TV show after that.
Yeah.
Like,
probably
I'm a big time movie star.
It's kind of like, well, we probably will never see Phil Coulson in another Marvel movie per se,
right?
Because
he's getting paid TV wages. And
yeah,
they don't want to pay him movie wages
because he was getting like TV wages for all of his cameos in the previous movies, and then in Avengers 1 anyway.
You think they give Stan Lee money to be in the cameos?
I had read an article that he'd like volunteer his time for that shit.
That'd be cool. I mean, if whatever. He did. He's fucking 90-something years old. How much more money does he need?
So
Christ.
I'm reading this book called Love, Sex, Fear, Death. It's like an oral history of this cult that happened in the 60s and 70s called the Process Church. And they were like super weird guys. They would wear like all black. And like this was like their daily garb. All black with like goat heads on their lapels. And then, like, black robes with, like, giant silver crosses with a red snake wrapped around it. Like
so Slytherins.
Yeah, so that's how they would walk around all the time. So in the book, the guy that's writing the account is talking about all the different cities that they open chapters in, whatever. And when he's talking about his time in New York City, they were constantly trying to court famous people to try to get them to join the church or give them money or whatever, because it's a cult.
Worked for Scientology.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're actually an offshoot of Scientology. It's like
really?
Two people that were Scientologists and didn't
and
like...
And were like, this isn't metal
well,
enough
they,
for us?
No, they, pretty much. They didn't like how L. Ron Hubbard was running it, so they quit it and then started their own thing. And it snowballs into like serious crazy shit, right? But one of the people that they meet in New York City is Stan Lee. And they sit and they have this meeting with Stan Lee, and he's like infatuated with them, but not because he wants to join their religion, because he thinks
he's
their
like,
costumes are awesome. He wants to like draw pictures of their costumes and put them in the comic books. So
and
you
thus
see
Morbius was
well,
born.
No, when you see like the evil,
like that,
when
that
you
would
see
be awesome.
The evil cultists in things like Shang-Chi or whatever,
yeah.
they're always dressed like that. They're wearing like black hooded robes with like some weird symbol on their chest, like. Because Stan Lee met the Process Church and was like, yeah, we should definitely
That's
make
awesome.
Villains dress this way.
I thought the crossover was amazing. I can't wait till next year. In the article I wrote about it, Forbes went on to say, because I was comparing it to what's going on in the big screen, Forbes said that after everything is said and done, Justice League will lose between $50 to $100 million after everything is said and done. So it's just weird to me that they wouldn't. I mean, yeah, they got to pay people more, but whatever. I mean, don't you want to fucking make money anyways doing movies and shit? Like, I feel like they could have taken the fan base that's already built into the TV shows and just applied it to the big screen.
There's definitely a way they could have done it smarter. They just chose not to. Like, when you look at the Marvel TV shows and stuff, they hint at the movies, but they don't have to use any of the characters.
Yeah. Right.
By, like, making TV shows with, like, the linchpins of the Justice League characters, they put themselves in, like, a super tough situation.
Well, and it's the segregation. Like, if you look at the Marvel stuff on the television, it's much smaller. Scale like
yeah.
there's the cosmic scale / Avengers movie stuff, which you know lends itself to that kind of spectacle and that kind of budget. And if you separate that stuff from the here's the things that are happening on the lower tier, the stories are just as important because story trumps everything. It's just it's got less dressing up to do and lends itself better to an episodic kind of an arrangement. And I think DC misses some of that.
Right, because you don't need a shitload of special effects or like crazy cosmic stuff to tell
exactly.
a Punisher story.
Yeah.
It's just a dude with a shitload of guns.
Exactly. Like, you can't crank that out, you know, at a gigantic scale on a TV show. It's just – it doesn't work.
But then when you do have something like Avengers or Infinity War, if you want him to make like a 30-second cameo
– exactly.
It's super easy to
and
do.
Then you go
yeah,
back to
totally.
That weird thing we were talking about earlier where you're like, ah, that's a Punisher for the
shook you, oh my god, I shook.
Well, they do it in the smaller, in S.H.I.E.L.D. when Civil War was going on, the stuff with Hydra was happening in S.H.I.E.L.D. at the same time.
Yeah. And they can do that by telling the story of it without having to bring the actors back and forth.
Yeah. It's like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. becomes like officially like the cinema tie-in for the main arc, which is the movie. That's weird to say.
It's, I don't know. I feel like because Marvel was there's a bunch of Marvel movies that came out before like the official like Avengers Phase 1 thing.
Right.
Like there's a Hulk movie and Punisher movies and like all sorts of stuff where they were testing the water with these individual movies and they never really got it right.
God, until I love Dolph Lundgren.
Until they hit Iron Man.
Yeah.
And then when Iron Man hit, they're like, oh, that's how we do it. We can just do this same thing with every major character and then create an Avengers movie because Iron Man is part of the Avengers. And you can tell that there was a lot of testing the waters that DC did with their TV show and then painted themselves into a corner. And then they had – I really feel like DC had this notion of – if we do it backwards, then Marvel, that differentiates us from Marvel.
Yes.
So we don't look like we're copying
this has
Marvel.
To be a market differentiation, well, which was a
and
bad.
I think they were like, well, look how successful these are doing. We don't need to make 17 other movies. We can just jump right to the fucking everybody team up. And that's what people want to see.
And that's not how it worked. Because you have, like, especially a movie like Suicide is the most glaring example of it. Because there are literally no backstory movies for any of
those
characters.
And that's the shit thing is you've got to build in 10-minute backstories for 6 different people, and it takes up a giant chunk of your movie.
Listen, I want to know more about Boomerang Dude and the guy whose superpower is the least of Batman's ability, which is I have a grappling hook. I can go to Home Depot right now and get a fucking grappling hook and be cooler than
that
guy.
That is how I knew that guy was going to die first.
Exactly.
Every character in that movie gets like a 5-minute intro, and he shows up. He's like, oh, this is whatever the fuck. I don't even remember his name. He can climb stuff.
Yeah.
Done.
Well, I mean, and like Diablo ends up with the most like convincing like backstory.
Yes. Yeah. He was awesome. And could then have you been fucking
kill him?
It could have been absolutely could have been an entire movie.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
And they just pissed it away.
They
and
just don't know how to do it.
As a consequence, they piss away one of their most popular characters.
Like could have been an awesome DC like TV show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
But they like piss away one of their biggest properties. They piss away Harley. They fuck up probably their third biggest character in DC, period.
Oh,
the
you
Joker.
Mean the Joker?
Yeah. And then they waste like a really good comedic action star in Will Smith on a really great character that they just don't use at all. And Will Smith disappoints yet another child.
But he's Will Smith. That's enough by itself, right?
No.
Will Smith, I thought he was him and Harley were the best two parts of the movie.
Oh, without question.
But
you can't build it that way around a team movie.
Being the best part of a turd sandwich still means you're a piece of bread with shit smeared all over it.
But they by doing it backwards, they fucked up what could have been good building if you did it reverse.
Yeah.
I mean, now, how many fucking directors or producers or whatever has the Flash gone through at this point now? Because nobody wants to do it. They're recasting Iris. They'd found their actress for Iris, and I just read an article the other day saying that they're ditching her and they're trying to find another one. Like, there's just so many things that you fucked up by going backwards thinking you could cash in on a team-up movie.
Yeah. And what they're going to end up having to do is in, like, 10 years, they're going to have to start all over again. And there'll be another Superman, and it'll be like Spider-Man, where there's Spider-Man 1 through 3, and then the other Spider-Man 1 and 2, and then the other Spider-Man. Like, it's like, which one do we pay attention to? Like, it's already like
the third one.
I know, but it's already like a trashed property until it gets finally pulled together right. Like, that they're gonna have the same fucking problem with X-Men because eventually they're gonna have to
not
go
if
back.
Marvel buys it back.
Yeah,
oh
but
Jesus!
But if Marvel,
please, God,
Marvel
please.
Buys it back. They're going to have to reboot.
They will. Oh yeah, for sure.
But they're not going to want to get rid of like Logan or Deadpool. or Deadpool 2, hopefully.
Well, but I don't think they're buying. I don't think they're buying Deadpool stuff. I didn't think.
But
they were because Deadpool's the fucking guy came out and was like, "Don't let Deadpool 2 come out first, and then you could buy it." I remember now, actually,
because he's a X-Force character.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, there's so many things that. When it doesn't get done right the first time, it's going to make it shitty and confusing for people the second time. Or if you're Spider-Man the third time.
Fantastic Four.
I don't even want to think about that. Because
like, but what do you think? What I don't understand. Like, what do you – if you're the guy who owns Spider-Man, like, do you just say, fuck it. I'm just going to keep making shitty movies and lose money? Or fuck it. Let the mouse give me fucking all kinds of money.
I think that was Sony's problem is Sony had to keep doing things with Spider-Man or lose the license, which is the
They have
reason.
To with the Fantastic Four. Same
yeah,
thing.
You get
yeah.
shitty yeah. video games in the same
But that's what I'm saying.
Reason.
But I don't think why not losing- just be – why not just take the money from the mouse and be done with it? I mean, you're not going to – I guarantee they lost
because,
money on that fucking movie.
Just in case they make a good
yes,
one.
That's exactly
just in case
it.
They make a good one, right? The returns on making a good one are going to be so much bigger than taking the one-time payment. It's like the lottery.
Well, and sometimes
they would,
it's just
they
like,
would have to make a good one that covers three bad ones, and I don't
make,
think that that would
have
happen.
To make about eight good ones at this point.
And sometimes it's just the corporation's like stance towards IP. You see it in video games all over the place. Well, they were acquire like an Atari game from like forever ago and sit on that thing, even though anybody else could make it, anybody else could make something good with it. They're just like, no, that's a potential thing. We might make money on one day, so nobody else can have it because we've got it on our toy box and fuck you. And so you get things.
It could be a threat.
Exactly. And so they just refuse to like the default stance is don't let anything we own go, period.
But you're not, but the, that
doesn't
in,
matter.
In movies, it, in, I don't know how fuck it works in video games because I don't play video games that much, but in movies, as a consumer, you go, fuck, I'm not going to go watch another shitty Fantastic Four movie from these guys. Are you
right.
fucking
no,
insane?
No, without question, but they don't see it that way.
Speaking of video games, let's talk a little bit about Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about Marvel Heroes and how sad that was. Marvel Omega, I guess now.
It wasn't that bad, but...
Well, yeah, but they just aced it. It's gone. December. This December, they closed the whole thing.
I know. I wasted a lot of hours on that.
I wasted hours and money in that.
Oh, that
and
sucks.
Well, it's one of those things that is, I mean, part of the gaming digital age here is that, like, games as a service is here and has been here for a while. But for me, this is one of the most recent experiences with that, where it's just like, oh, remember all that stuff you had and all that time you built, you know, in a single-player game or whatever? That's on my hard drive. I'm going to have that forever. But this is a context of a world that literally no longer exists. The servers are gone, finished, done. All of that stuff has evaporated. And my experiences are still mine, but...
But all of the stuff in your game, and there's no potential for it to ever come back.
Exactly.
Even if they reboot the game, that's all gone.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, but going to Battlefront 2, so...
Is this the fuck EA hour?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
So...
Marvel character dinner announced. Go ahead, sorry.
So, Electronic Arts... releases Battlefront 1, the Star Wars game.
EA, for those not familiar with the whole Electronic Arts name.
Yeah, sorry. I guess I don't think
for the new and old school gamers.
They're like, who the fuck is Electronic Arts?
So Battlefront 1...
They used
1,
to make good games. Now like, they just ruin good IPs.
So it's a low-content game. Like, when it came out, it was like $60 or whatever. Like, within like 3 months, you could buy it used for like $10. Because like everybody had beat it, and there wasn't like really a whole lot to the game. But people were starting to get excited about
Star Wars real important.
So they started to get excited about Battlefront 2. But then when they released it, Battlefront 2, basically the only way that you could buy new characters and content and stuff was with these crystals that you could get either through like extraneous amounts of gameplay.
Yes.
Or by
money.
Buying it.
Like the problem with EA, I mean it's the landscape of gaming has changed as things have gone along. So I think the thing that EA pulled here is in no way different than things any other corporation would do. They turned up the knob until people bitched. They made you buy a $60 game for full price, and they were just like, well, we can monetize this thing twice by applying F2P or free-to-play mechanics to that same concept. But you already bought in for a $60 game, and the tacit – agreement there between people that buy games and publishers is that if I buy a $60 game, then I expect a certain type of experience. But then separating that into the, well, we're going to charge you $60, but then we're going to turn around and try to monetize it in a way that a non-$60 game would be monetized. And it's just complete bullshit. And people got in a giant uproar because they're like, basically, you got too fucking greedy, and now we're going to call you on it. And that's the thing you see all along the way. It's when the first DLC was horse armor, and horse armor was literally $3 for a stupid horse armor. And people were like, fuck this, I'm never buying this. Fuck Oblivion, I'm never buying it again. And that was the backlash then, and then obviously things went back down. So I think EA is in this place where they tried to pull that thing, but now the internet's a little bigger than it used to be, and there was a huge backlash. And then it got to the point where EA started to lose money, which then made Disney sit up and realize, hey, you're fucking with Star Wars, which you do not do. You guys are going to have to do something about this. And then Forbes got a hold of it. And so the backlash, which would have normally just been, you know, constrained to the gamers community and people bitching on Reddit, got all the way to Forbes and got all the way to real money, which is what they really care about. So it'll be interesting to see how far back they turn the dial. I mean, they're always going to keep going on that, but it's very much what the market will bear. And EA found out, much to their detriment, that the market will not bear you charging $60 and then shitty F2P on top of that, on top of the game not being all that great to start with.
Right, and especially when you look at a game. So, like, I just for the Black Friday sales on PS4, I got WWE 2K18. Okay? So, game on
– my ears perked back up.
The game on sale with the season pass and all the DLCs and any DLCs that come out over the next year was $60.
Exactly.
Like, without the sale, it was $80, which means $60 plus like $20 worth of downloadable content.
Right.
That's completely bearable.
And good DLC is good DLC. Exactly.
And I'm going to get like fucking – well, a jillion hours of gameplay out of it.
And you're not gambling.
Exactly.
You're not opening an unknown box to see what's inside of it. And then even to stack on top of that, the thing that EA fucked up is, again, the tacit agreement between game makers and game or people who consume games is that if I'm going to be in a multiplayer environment, we're on a level playing field in so much as it can be. People have different mouses and monitors and computers and all that shit, so that's unlevel just because of how it's going to be. But the game you're playing is the same. Imagine if you sat down to play chess and you could pay $2 so that the knight could make one extra space of a move. You would not want to play that other fucking guy.
Or he has two queens.
Or he has two queens or some other dumb fuck thing.
Or he's some Korean player that just plays 24/7 and gets to have a board full of
queens.
If you
just want it to be a different color hat, by all means, charge what you want, do what you want, and plenty of people will make money that way. If you look at Dota, the whole goddamn game is free. It makes a shit ton of money because people are willing to spend the extra money in that. Marvel Heroes could play it completely for free, but I needed 75 other goddamn characters because I wanted to see what Wolverine looked like.
Somewhat close to EA, Blizzard with Overwatch. You pay $40, $60 for Overwatch, and if you want loot boxes, you can level up.
Exactly.
Which is fairly easy. You only need to play about 5 or 6 matches a day until
exactly.
you start getting to
they
like
keep that drip feed on you. Exactly.
Or you can pay like $1.99 and get like a box.
But
it is cosmetic only.
And EA fucked up here because the changes weren't cosmetic, which unbalances the entire conception of a multiplayer game.
And that like level playing field. Like
exactly.
So now as a consequence, you get the Black Friday sale and you can look at the game rack and the only game that's left is Battlefront 2.
Yep.
Like,
supposedly they're like estimated to miss like $7.1 billion to their investors. Like,
good.
That's how far down the stock has gone already.
100% glad. Like, they need to learn that lesson, and as a consequence of them messing it all up, other people will also be like, oh, that's the line right there. We can't push that yet.
Now, do you think Disney goes so far as to say, you fuck this up again, we pull your license?
No.
I've read an article.
Who are they going
to
give it to?
Supposedly that's already
in the works.
Like,
really?
In the works, where like Disney is pissed.
Well, wouldn't. I mean, you got to think about it. Star Wars comes out in like a week.
Oh, sure.
At the time of this recording.
And you release a blockbuster AAA title that fails,
that flops,
miserably.
And backlashes
that, like, goes,
that hard.
Like, that goes the way of Atari's E.T. Like, there's
okay.
In 20
let's
years,
not say things we can't take back.
In 20 years, there's going to be a landfill in
Arizona
just filled with Battlefield 2 copies.
There's just going to be Amazon servers that had the digital content on it, and they just take the discs out themselves and dump it in the fucking trash.
trash. Some guy breaks it. Oh, let's let Juan talk about not video games.
Oh, no, you're good. Go ahead.
You'll be at you glaze over.
No, no, you're
you'll be
good.
At a bar one night and we'll have.
I don't
like
know what the fuck he's talking about, but you're good.
Of Battlefield.
I like not knowing what we're talking about.
So, what else do I have? They announced that Riverdale is going to have a Sabrina spinoff, which should be pretty cool.
Riverdale's got like pretty fucking popular. Like I haven't watched any of it, but it's got pretty good ratings.
Mel
it's really
and
good.
Sophia love it. They think it's great. I haven't had a chance to watch it, but they because it's like dark drama.
Yeah,
like it's intense. There's murder. Like it's kind of mystery.
It's like a more comic booky Degrassi.
Yeah,
because things are still like way over characterized and like kind of cheesy, but it's still good. I think it's worth watching.
But Sabrina, that excites me because I mean I like the comic. I like the plot line. You know, the idea that one of the characters in the Archie universe is literally a witch is. It's pretty fun. Like if you read Afterlife with Archie, she like inadvertently causes a zombie apocalypse, and that's hilarious. So I don't know.
All the Afterlife with Archie is fucking amazing.
I know.
I need to read that.
So
I read like the first two episodes. I need to get back into that.
Archie and the Ramones.
Well, it took forever.
Really
like it took forever for those sequels to come out.
The Archie
for, yeah,
and
yeah.
the Predator. Yeah.
I like that one. That was good.
They're nuts. Like all that stuff is nuts. Like I feel like. When I first – like I remember – I mean this was at the inception of our podcast. I remember reading an article about zombie Archie and I was like that is going to be so
– Yeah, it was pretty early on.
Stupid. I was like that sounds so dumb. Like how could that ever happen and be good? And then you get the right artists and the right writers attached to it and then you actually like take the plot seriously and you realize that the characters in Archie are so familiar – that you can enjoy the familiarity with those characters and then layer a totally different story onto yeah. it. Like Archie versus Sharknado, Archie versus the Predator, Archie meets the Ramones, Afterlife with Archie. They're all fucking
Archie versus
Jughead's a werewolf.
Yeah,
now.
Jughead's
like,
a werewolf right now.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's just a really cool concept and like what very rarely, I think, in comic books do you see successful rebrandings of, like, entire lines of comic books. Yeah. Like, maybe Future Foundation is a halfway decent example
Didn't
of that.
Didn't we talk to one of the artists on Afterlife? Come from Denver Comic Con?
One of the artists or one of the writers.
Who's on a panel.
Which, yeah. But I don't know. It's a lot of fun. So Sabrina should be cool. I kind of want to watch Riverdale and then so that I can watch Sabrina. But,
right.
It's worth a watch.
Okay. Continuing on TV, The Orville, which is
– oh, so good.
It is.
We were supposed to watch that.
So good.
I really, really dig that show. If you're not
I
watching
not yet
it,
seen it,
you need to because as big of a Star Trek fan as you are, this is like – yes, it's comedic.
It's
like,
Galaxy Quest.
Yes, it's funny, but it's not as spoofy as Galaxy Quest.
Hmm.
Like, it deals with, like, actual serious ideas mm-hmm. in the same way that Star Trek does.
Interesting.
But with the occasional, like, dick joke. Like, it's genuine.
Like the show.
It's basically – so they're an exploratory ship. Okay?
Right.
They're not, like, one of the main – like, they're not going into deep space. They're doing, like, you know – like take supplies to this place.
Mm.
You know, their missions aren't as important.
They are not on the flagship.
Exactly. So imagine if like so here's Captain Picard in, you know, the SS Enterprise and they're
right.
traveling the far reaches of space and discovering new civilizations and they have this big important job. So
right.
the people that work on the ship take their jobs super, super seriously. And now here's these guys on the tugboat Orville fucking schlepping bullshit around. Like, they're the grunts. Like, and obviously it's not in the Federation. Like, it's not a Star Trek canon show.
Right.
But, like, they're the schleps that do the fucking grunt work. Like,
somebody's
got to
dig
janitor.
A ditch. They're
exactly.
space ditch diggers.
And they end up in these situations that are like, this should probably be dealt with by the actual serious people that do the serious thing.
But space is fucked up.
But space is huge. And we found this like there's one episode where they find this spaceship that's like a habitat ship for like deep space
good.
Travel. Okay.
Right. What's the name of it? Silent Running.
Yeah. Or so they get onto the ship. And they find that there's a civilization on the ship, okay? and they need to restart the ship.
Because they don't know it's a ship.
Because the engine is broken. So they go talk to the kid, and they're like, hey, where's your control room? And the kid's like, where the fuck did you come from? Like, so it's like this very serious thing. Like, there's this totalitarian government that set itself up that believes there's nothing outside of the ship.
Right.
And then, like, these revolutionaries that understand that there's something, there can't outside, be something outside of us. Of it. We just don't know what it is.
Hey, this ship is flat.
That ship actually is flat.
So's this one.
Oh, man. We were talking about that last night. Don't even get me started on stupid fucking flat earthers again. Oh,
God. So dumb.
For like 20 minutes, I was like yelling at Tim's friends through Tim.
But they'll never hear it.
He's like, why are you upset with me?
I don't believe that.
They do, and they're not going to care what you say.
No.
But so they deal with like these big – like Star Trek, like
classic
ideas,
science fiction concepts.
But their pilot's a smartass.
That's awesome.
And like their one, like the captain is just kind of a jagoff. Like, you know, like his first mate is his ex-wife. And so there's this weird tension.
She left him for an alien.
Yeah. No, he left her because she was fucking an alien.
Well, okay. She cheated on him.
Because that alien had helicopter and then, dick game.
The alien comes back in one of the episodes. Oh, and he's got like a pheromone that he makes everybody fall in love with him.
Nice.
So the captain like tries to sleep with him. Oh, it's fucking amazing.
Awesome.
It's funny.
I haven't gotten that episode yet. But like in general, the show is just so well done, and like Seth MacFarlane is very funny.
I like him.
He makes me laugh every time. I like a lot of the stuff that he does. I like a lot of the ideas that he has.
He's got a fast wit, and that's what I like.
But sometimes he goes like too much.
Yes,
and I'm just like, okay, like calm down, Seth. We get it. You're fucking funny, and you can sing. Shut up. This show is like Seth held at like
somebody edited
right
him
level
to keep him off, yeah, that top level where it goes too much.
It's perfect, like, because the actual Star Trek is going and doing non-Star Trek-y things. Like, it's a I actually think
like
it's okay Slayers as well.
Yeah,
but it's so different from when I think Star Trek, I think more the Orville, less Star Trek Discovery. But it's,
it feels
they're
so
both different, and they're both okay.
It feels
I like
so much
Discovery,
like Next Generation B Team. Like, that is exactly what it feels like. I do love the ongoing joke. So there's one character, I forget her name, but she's like the security captain. And she is from a planet that has a much higher gravity.
Oh, yeah.
So she's super, super strong.
Right. Right?
So Seth MacFarlane's character, who's the captain, he'll go up and like try to open a door and be like, hey, can you get this for me? And she'll like kick the door like out of the wall. He'll be like, I loosened it up for her. Like, he's told that joke like 3 or 4 times over the course of the season so far, and it makes me laugh every time.
Yeah, there's two of the pilots. They're fucking stupid, and there's a AI robot on the ship with them, and so they're throughout the series they're teaching the robot how
to be
humanity
human.
Is, yeah, and all that
nice
stuff. And so there was I told this story before, but there was an episode where they're teaching the robot about practical jokes.
Right.
So, you know, so in the middle of the night, the robot sneaks into one of the pilot's room and cuts his whole leg off without the guy knowing. And so he wakes up and he gets up to get up and do his thing, and he fucking just
and then he comes into the bridge and is like, what is this?
And it's awesome because during the climactic part of that, so he goes to med bay and they got to build him a new leg. And during the climactic part of that particular episode, they need him to come pilot the ship. And his little weird deformed leg is just flopping
just
everywhere.
Like half grown.
So they're trying to be serious, and his weird little leg is just flopping. It's fucking
screen
hilarious.
Awesome.
And then once the whole culmination of the show is over, the pilot goes to the android guy and goes, you know, in reality, that was an amazing practical joke. Like, he's like, because what is the point of a practical joke? To piss off your friends, and then 20 minutes later, they're like, yeah, that was really hilarious.
It's good. Definitely.
It is.
Definitely worth a watch.
Let's see. What else do I have? I went and watched Coco. Cried.
I haven't watched
it yet. Through the whole thing.
Yeah, that
Coco
makes sense.
Yeah.
The Disney movie?
The new Pixar movie.
Pixar Disney.
Mel messaged me that you cried all the way through. Yeah. I'm not fucking surprised.
Pixar. Oh,
dude. So
Pixar Disney.
So the other thing about it is, like, you know, it deals with, you know, like, Hispanic culture and this kid's grandma and, like, all this other stuff. And
so the quarter Hispanic in him got all weepy.
Half. It's half. But, like, it just reminded me a lot of, like, my grandparents and stuff. Okay. And so through, like, the, you know, like, that first, like, 10 minutes of Up. And you get through it.
Never watched Up.
The greatest love story ever told.
Son of a bitch. Like, why am I openly weeping at the beginning of this movie for kids?
Coco took down Justice League, so.
How could it not? Like,
it's made a ton of movie already.
So, aside from me being.
Or a ton of money. Ton of money.
It has made a ton of movie as well. Aside from me being, like, a weepy wreck, like, during the whole movie. Fucking amazing movie. Like, it's funny, it's got great, like, the animation is
Pixar does good.
Stunning.
Pixar, like, does good work.
There's really only one problem I have with the movie. There is this fucking 25-minute quote-unquote short.
Oh,
that
is
a fucking episode of, like, Frozen, basically.
Oh, with Olaf? Yes,
it is so shitty.
Do you not want to make a snowman?
Oh my god. It's awful. It's pointless. It's awful. It goes on forever. Like, literally, when the 7 or 8 year old behind you says, "Are we in the wrong movie?" Your short has officially gone too long. Like, one of my friends, Drea, posted on her Facebook, like, "I loved Coco, but I hated the Frozen short." And then, like, this litany of, like, basic white bitches was like, "It was so great." I'm all, we didn't watch the same short because that's garbage. I don't need 22 minutes of, like, people singing
bullshit. A lot of people do,
It was awful.
Frozen is a giant fucking franchise. It's a giant thing for him, man.
The only problem is, the short and the movie are two separate things.
Yeah, they've done other Olaf shorts. Apparently it's like a ongoing thing. And my kids love them.
So what bugs me about it is Pixar used to have Pixar shorts in front of their movies. Yeah. So when I saw, like, the little Disney logo, and I was like, oh, they're probably going to do a little short. I was anticipating one of the really amazing Pixar shorts, and instead I got a fucking TV episode of Frozen. Like, and it was fucking terrible. I'd rather watch 22 minutes of, like, the birds on the wire, like, farting with each other, because that's hilarious. Or the jackrabbit, or the dude playing chess. Like, there's a billion fucking Pixar shorts that are better than that piece of trash fucking short.
A lot of people love it, bro.
Frozen's kind of becoming, like, the Minions for DreamWorks.
Oh, yeah. Where they might take it too far.
I might take a short side note.
To be fair,
might.
Nobody I know fucking hates the Minions.
I think that's what they're trying to do with Olaf and the reindeer.
There is
I love the Minions.
There is definitely a potential for them to, like, Shrek Christmas special the Minions.
I think they're done with them. I don't know if they're doing anything more with that.
I don't think they are.
Shrek is love. So we're completely.
Who is this? Who is that?
I don't know. Some guy.
Hashtag not.
Hashtag not Tim's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Hashtag gay progeny.
Thinking outside the long box is
this
endorse any
fucking
of this
gay
anti-gay
ass
conversation
show is as politically fucking correct as any
we
snowflake
hate the gays.
That's where you go to, like, elevator music and have that part just said mid episode.
We hate blacks, we hate Mexicans, we hate everything.
I hate myself.
But we also love all of those things. We're very conflicted.
In our porn. Just in our porn.
I hate more white people than I hate, like, any other race.
Well, there's
clear on that.
To be fair, those
hating white guys.
To be fair, there's a lot more white people out there than there are a lot of other races.
I just hate people.
I know. I'm
just across the spectrum.
I don't like people.
I can't be racist because I dislike people.
Yeah. Equal opportunity hater.
I like dogs.
And I'm in sales.
That's not true. I don't really like dogs.
Animals are nice.
No, you don't.
I like cats.
I like dogs. I hate cats.
Yeah. But there's a cat right there.
I know, I hate him. And
what's the
shit
deal with dogs and cats?
Sorry.
I like Jerry Seinfeld.
Now you get out.
Now I hate
I love
Jews.
Seinfeld.
No.
Oh,
wow.
Okay.
So,
wow. All right.
A time has come again.
There's this show on Hulu called The Detour. It stars, oh man,
Is this the one like with that? The little
Jason,
kids?
Jason Jordan, I want to say, is his name. And it's written,
the wrestler?
No. Jason Bateman, maybe? No, that's not right either. I can't remember his name, but he used to be on The Daily Show. He was one of the commentators on The Daily Show, and I cannot think of his name. But him and Samantha Bee write this show. It's about
– imagine how much more exciting that would have been if you could have remembered his name.
I know. It pisses me off that I can't
John
remember
Still
his
and Michael
name.
Kirk are going, motherfucker, it's this guy.
I looked it up on the internet in 2 seconds. But anyway, so –
the old Still Next Hour Shower Show?
Yeah, that's the one.
That
yeah.
sounds like a cool show. Yeah, Next Hour Shower Show? That sounds hot.
Starring Clyde Still in the shower.
With sugar tits? Yeah. I'm in for that fucking show.
I'm watching it.
Sold the ticket.
So the premise of the show is this guy, his kids are like super like socially developed because they've like homeschooled and stuff like that. And the first season they go on this cross country vacation that was meant to be a plane ride, but he loses his job and has to like sell the plane tickets. And it's very complicated, but it's like, you know, the movie Very Bad Things.
Yes.
It's like that where it just like ratchets up and everything gets like progressively more and more insane.
There are a few things I love more than a black comedy. So, and by black comedy, I mean a comedy that is dark, not necessarily a comedy involving blacks. Although the juxtaposition between those two things, also great.
A black comedy.
Yes.
Like Get Out.
Yes.
It's a perfect black comedy. But anyway, so the second season is about them moving to New York. So in the first episode, they're on the streets of New York and they're getting ready to cross the street against the light. You know, the light is red and it says don't walk. And the little boy says, stop. You can't go until the white man tells you to go because like the little thing is
saying
a white man.
A white guy.
And the dad's like, you can't. No, you can't say that. Just say, you know, you can't go till the light changes. The mom's like, he can say that. That's what it is. A white man. A white man tells you what to do. And this black guy and his mom go to cross the street. And the little kid says, you can't go till the white man says you can go. And like, it's obviously that all snowballs, right? At one point, because this is like a 5-6 minute long scene. At one point, this girl hands the little boy a juice, okay? And he takes the juice.
I totally thought you were going to say Jew.
No, he takes the juice and he drinks it, but he doesn't like it. And so he gives it to somebody else and says, because he thinks the girl's cute, he says, can you drink this? I don't want to. I think this juice is gross. And the little girl hears him say it and goes, what did you say? And the mom goes, he doesn't like the juice. Oh. And this guy next to him, because it's this crowded New York street, goes, he doesn't like the what? No, he said juice, not Jews. Like, and it's that kind of show where everything just like is perpetually snowballing. Like, it's fucking hilarious.
I like perpetual snowballs.
The
I knew that was coming.
Ha ha!
My own joke surprised me.
Hey, shut up. Oh man,
we need to take a break at some point.
Okie doke.
We've been going. The segment's been going for about an hour and a half, and we still need to do two fucking pop culture classics and then an end point.
So I'm gonna say, we got asked to do a review of a comic called Poop Office. And I want to mention this on this episode really quick. I have not finished Poop Office because prior to downloading the PDF, I did not realize that it was like 250 pages of like comic strips. So
a lot of shit.
So when Juan messaged me, he's like, do you have time to read another comic before the episode? This is like on Friday. I was like, yeah, sure. And then I like downloaded it. I was like, I'm not gonna finish this. So next episode we'll probably talk
about what'd you think about it? What you have read.
What I have read is weird and funny in like a really weird way. It's like Dilbert, but if all the characters in Dilbert were poop.
Tim knows the guy somehow.
Yeah, Tim met the guy.
So I was like three tables down from them at Baltimore Comic Con this year, and they are all fantastic people. The guy and I think his wife, maybe girlfriend, I don't know. But it was two of them there. And
there was a guy and a lady at the booth.
And their comic looked fucking amazing, and I really want one of their poop plushies. And I regret every day not having gotten one.
Like, it's funny.
So
like,
TOTLB wants one of your poop plushies.
So like,
an aggravated artist.
So maybe we'll get one for free.
So the thing about it is it's all of them that he's done. Like, the 250 pages is all of them. So, like, already, like, I think I've read about 50 pages of it so far. So, like, probably, like, minus the introductions, I've probably read, like, 45 of the strips. Already, just, like, a third or however many that is into the book, it's getting progressively better and funnier. Like, the first, like, few of them are just really dumb poop jokes. And now it's, like, starting to get into this weird, like how Dilbert is, like, where it's, like, this, you know, commentary on, like, capitalism and, like, the ennui of working in, like, a office situation. Like, the first few strips are about how instead of a water cooler, they have a pee-pee cooler. And that's, like, literally what it's called is a pee-pee cooler, you know. All of the characters are named, like, you know, poop names. And it's just, there's, partially it's, like, this one-trick pony of shit jokes. Like, they have staff, S-T-A-P-H meetings, like, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But, like, as it progresses, it, like, has this weird tone of, we literally work shitty jobs. Like, so it's, I don't know, it's developing this really weird mental space.
So what you're saying is, like, when you let it stew a little bit, it kind of ferments.
Yeah.
Starts to take on a new odor, extra depth.
Gets kind of jenkamy. Mm.
You start to get to the soup to nuts, you know, level of
I mean, it's as far as it goes, it's a pretty corny.
Hey, wow. Yo. Hook. Hey, yo.
Just saying.
Get in a fire. It doesn't matter what kind of fire. Even a fucking lighter will do. Just hold it to your face until you're dead.
Wow.
Well,
I didn't know we invited ISIS to the party.
Let's take a break.
Man, Gabe, you look flushed. I'm going to join you in that fire.
Oh, man.
We're happy to have you with us this evening and want you to enjoy every minute of your stay here.
Listen to me. Please listen. If you don't, if you won't, if you fail to understand, then the same incredible terror that's menacing me will strike at you!
Are you ready to enter the sci-fi double feature drive-in? Every month we hold a special double feature with a very interesting theme thought up by your host, the conspiracy-loving Elisa, and yours truly, Jarrett the Kaiju Man Weglin. We discuss giant monsters, little monsters, genetic abominations, robots gone awry, aliens coming to Earth, cryptids, and anything in between. So join us at the sci-fi double feature drive-in podcast every first and third Thursday of the month, and don't forget to stop by our snack bar. Our first.
Every holiday season, there's one toy everyone has to have.
I want the Turbo Man action figure with the arms and legs that move, and the Rocket Roar jetpack, and the Boomerang shooter.
Getting it is every child's dream.
Whoever doesn't can be a real loser.
Finding it.
You got the doll, right?
Is this father's nightmare.
I'll get that toy. I promise.
Whoa! Nothing like waiting till the last minute, Howitzer.
Especially on Christmas Eve.
Your Christmas spirit.
The last one just left.
No. It's two fathers.
This is war.
One mission.
Oh, poor baby.
And every man for himself.
I think maybe, though, know, we could join up as a team. You know, like Starsky and Hutch.
Well, late delivery of Turbo Man at Toy Works. Let's go.
Is there a problem, officer?
You can never do too much to make a child's Christmas magical.
Hey, buddy.
From the director of Mrs. Doubtfire.
You want a Turbo Man for Christmas?
Forget it. I'm not going to sit in your lap.
Tony, Sean.
That was taken this morning.
And from the director of The Flintstones.
Don't open that up. No, no, no.
Of course, there's some assembly required.
You know what you guys are? Nothing but a bunch of sleazy con men in red suits.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Sinbad.
I work for the post office and I'm unstable. Tell him.
This man is totally insane.
Thank you.
Christmas comes but once a year.
No! single all the way.
You picked the wrong day.
That chair is a piece of shit.
So they just... They just heard the trailer to Jingle All the Way.
Oh, did you... Are we recording now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we're back!
All right.
All right, so talking about our first of two Christmas pop culture classics. Yay! Welcome to our Christmas episode, which I didn't say this was that.
Jingle.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is technically right around, the Christmas episode.
This will come out right
around
Christmas.
You let me say what I said at the beginning of this episode, and now you told me it's the Christmas episode?
It's about the birth of Jesus.
The birth of something.
That guy's virgin birth.
He's trying to birth something.
So, first pop culture classic. Merry Christmas to everybody. Jingle All the Way, 1996, Brian Levitt film, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sinbad, Phil Hartman, and
Chris Parnell.
Chris, we're going to say again. Chris Parnell just because
that's like one of his earlier works.
He's so young that Tim and I are both like, I know who that is. I know who that is from his voice.
And the boy that plays young Anakin.
And the boy,
I don't fucking know his name at all.
Whatever,
doesn't matter.
He's a young man, very young man. So quick trivia on this,
his name is Jake Lloyd.
The idea behind it,
nobody cares,
is the craze in the 80s for Cabbage Patch Kids, where like the Cabbage Patch Kid would sell out and everybody would go nuts to try to find Cabbage Patch Kids and stuff. Black Friday always looks like this now. Like it didn't always used to look like people stampeding the doors. Also, incidentally, it randomly
Black Friday wasn't very crazy.
Not anymore. Mm-hmm. Because Amazon.
It's super easy. Yeah. I went out and Black Friday shopped, and it wasn't that crazy. It was easy.
I know. It's calmed down a lot because Amazon.
Yeah. Well, but there was still a shit ton of people out there, and it still always makes money.
Right.
I do both. I go out and I shop online.
But they don't go places where there are that many people.
It's because you're a baby. But they do now. So the Target line was huge, but now they'll just come out with little wristbands and they'll be like, "Hey, are you here for this store? You know, this big whatever it is," and they'll give you a wristband. And then once they run out, they run out.
I went to one Black Friday sale, Smokey's 420. Hmm. They had you get an eighth of Willie's Reserve for $1. All right. And I told Mel, I was like, you know what? They open at 8. They're giving the dollar weed to the first 10 people. I can probably be there at 7 and rely on like the sleepiness of stoners to be okay. And I got there at 7 and I was the 8th person in line. You know, there was like these two girls are like, we got here at 5. I was like, what for? Are you stupid? Like,
they got high and couldn't remember what the fuck time it was.
Like, what time did they open? I think it's 6.
Is the sun up?
No, but it's really – and then now Walmart stays open all day so that it's not – you don't have that giant rush that goes into the store. It's changed a lot.
But also
still,
so they can force their employees
still
to work
a shit
on
ton
fucking Thanksgiving.
Oh, who cares?
I care.
You work fucking – there's way more important people out there fucking working on Thanksgiving and Christmas than retail fucking workers. They can get over it.
Yeah. Me. They need to be there to service my desires.
Cops and fucking hospital people. Like, retail workers can work Thanksgiving too.
No,
get over it.
It's dumb. I hate that. We shouldn't. Nobody should have to work on holidays.
Well, but it is. It's just the end. It is what it is, bro. People who are saving lives are working Christmas. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because somebody has to be there to save lives.
It's a day
nobody has to be there to give you a fucking toy. Like, you can do it tomorrow.
Disagree. Who cares?
Oh, you shut up. You don't go to Walmart ever.
That is also true.
Yeah, exactly. You don't go
where
people are.
But there are other stores.
You don't go where
people are. Listen, when Yankee Candle is fucking closed on Thanksgiving, and
I need my
pumpkin cinnamon.
When I worked retail and I worked on Thanksgiving, I found a time to be with my family.
There's time.
Who wants to be with your family?
Well, I'm saying there's always time and there's time to make money.
I just don't want to work.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't matter if it's Thanksgiving or Friday.
Anyway, back to Jingle All the Way. Turbo Man's costume is based on The Flash, and clearly his television show is based on the Power Rangers.
Yeah. That whole opening bit
is like definitely like an episode of Power Rangers. Okay. I kind of would want to watch Turbo Man.
Yeah,
it looks funny.
I would rather watch that part of Turbo Man than the rest of the actual
holiday.
No,
that's not true. I thought it was pretty funny.
It's pretty half and
half. So they made an actual Turbo Man, like the toy, but they did very, very few of them. Yeah, it was a very small release. So as of this morning, when I looked on eBay, the cheapest official Turbo Man that you could buy was $150, but most of them were like $300.
Yeah. So cheaper than Szechuan sauce.
Yes, cheaper than one packet of Szechuan sauce, which apparently you can get like a whole car for that. Anyway, so this is the one piece of trivia that I thought was the most fascinating. The script for this in court was determined to be stolen from a Detroit high school biology teacher named Brian Webster, who had sent the script into the studio, and they basically like took the script, gave it to somebody else who made like incredibly minor edits, like a word here, a word there, credited that guy with the writing and fucked over the guy that actually sent in the script. They had to give him like $1.7 million.
That's why companies don't
just de facto degree.
Yeah. They don't take that shit anymore. Somebody with the Kevin Smith show we went to, somebody in the audience during one of the questions was like, "Hey, I wrote a script. Will you read it?" And he said, "No," because the last thing I want to do is be like, "Man, I don't really like this," or "Yeah, this is cool," and then accidentally put some shit in my movie for you to sue me.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I thought that was really interesting that, like, they were like, yeah, you stole this script. So, some guy was like, you know, he went to the movie theaters with, like, his kids or whatever, and he's watching. He's all,
motherfucker.
Fuck, I wrote that.
Like, he's saying like, the words.
His wife was like, shut up. We're trying to watch a movie. He's like, I fucking wrote that.
I can prove it. This is the next line.
That's funny.
The guy behind him is like, spoiler alert, asshole, shut up. So
kids giving him classic like child shit like, yeah, dad, you wrote it.
He's like, no, I actually wrote this fucking movie.
I'm going to sue the shit out of them.
Yeah, and then once he won his $1 million, they were like, yeah, I knew you wrote it the whole time.
Exactly,
dad.
Can I borrow $50?
Right. I had your back the whole time.
So... something similar that happened to me last episode happened to me this episode, except for I only missed
erectile dysfunction?
Movie. Sort of. I've been putting on movies and just falling asleep. Like, it's been happening to me more and more because I'm getting old. But so I watched probably the first 40-ish minutes of Jingle All the Way and then fell asleep and then watched the last like 3 minutes. So I know it has a happy ending. Like
for the guy going to jail and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. What guy's going to jail?
Sinbad.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He was in handcuffs.
Always the black guy going to jail.
To be fair, the black guy did assault a lot of people.
He did. He fucking sprays Arnold with dog mace at one point.
In his opening scene, Sinbad like strangles some random woman in the crowd.
Yeah. Oh, that's your phone.
I thought it was a funny movie. I enjoyed the movie looking back on it. It wasn't fucking great. No, it wasn't. It's worth a watch.
Watching the movie, it's funny. Like, yeah. It definitely could get added to the rotation of, like, Christmas movies that are fun to watch with the family. Because Phil Hartman's in it. Hilarious as like the guy next door that's literally
weird,
trying to
creepy
steal
dude.
Everybody's wife.
Yeah, but like, all of those wives like want him except for her.
He's like the promiscuous Ned Flanders.
Yeah. He's totally slutty Ned Flanders. Like, the scene where she's baking cookies and he like tells her, you know, why don't you go take a shower, relax, do something for yourself. He gets like super close and like undoes her apron thing. And she goes, okay.
Like, so you're saying he pulled a Weinstein.
Yeah. Weinstein.
Oh, pardon me.
Just kidding. Yeah. It's
an ongoing joke.
We say it wrong all the time. People correct us. Why anybody gives a fuck about that?
It's a pretty stacked cast, though, for such a weird fucking movie.
There are a lot of comedians that probably weren't very famous then that are famous now.
For sure.
And Sinbad was funny. And that's a weird sentence to say because I don't think I can remember any time when
it's not
I thought Sinbad because
this
was funny.
Isn't a Sinbad movie.
Yeah.
That's why he was funny. All of his movies where he stars in the movie are fucking horrible.
Yeah.
Like Shazam.
What?
Somebody's head just exploded. They're back in their universe now.
No!
Those damn dirty apes.
Oh, man. But he's fucking hilarious in this movie. Like, and so Arnold Schwarzenegger... So I told Ashton... It's an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Right.
He's like, does like a lot of shit blow up? Like no, it's
one,
like a
one
dumb,
thing blows up.
I know, but it's like a dumb kids comedy
right,
because
right.
there was this point where Arnold had made so much money making action films that they're like that they know they're rated R, but they know like 13-year-old kids are going to see it right. because they're not that bad. You know, parents were constantly taking their kids to see shit like Terminator and Predator and stuff. I still take my kids to see movies like that.
Hashtag bad father.
Yeah. So
true. All true.
Go let your dog in. So there's this moment in his history where they're like, well, all these kids know who he is already. Let's just make movies geared towards kids
yeah.
with him in it. So
right.
you get like Jingle All the Way and Twins and
Kindergarten
Cop and stuff like that. Oh, fucking cats.
Yeah,
but
I don't want him to knock. He might knock that fucking thing over.
It's okay. So there's – like it's just funny that against casting like that, you know, going against his typecast, he actually is really, really funny because he's so bad at just being a normal dude, you know? Like when he
– it's funny because you get funny little lines from each one of those weird comedies that he does that he's known for.
Exactly. But like the scene that really sticks out with me is when he is in bed with his wife and she's like, man, I guarantee you by now all of those are sold out. Like you're not going to find one. And she turns off the lights and his eyes get all big. It's
he
like
he turns and there's just a spotlight in his face.
Yeah, it's just like the most overacted moment in any movie I think I've seen in 10 years. It's like,
why you mean they're sold out?
Like we need John here for that.
Yeah, that was horrible.
I know. I don't know. It's just – it's funny like how perfect Arnold Schwarzenegger is at doing like a kid's comedy because – he's so bad at doing a kid's comedy.
Right.
It was funny. The Sinbad where the bomb actually turns out to be a bomb. That was a real bomb? We're living in a sick, sick world.
His utter misrepresentation of the United States Postal Service.
No, I feel like that's
guest.
I was going to send you something, but I refrained. I was like, this is totally Tim.
I do love that the patch on his hat, because obviously they can't use the USPS logo because
yeah.
they would get the shit suit out of it.
Oh, Lord,
says,
yeah.
mail deliverer.
There's a scene where he's like throwing letters and I'm like,
it's
don't do that.
He was going
in my head. I'm like, that's a fireable offense.
He was going too slow. Arnold was running. They were racing, and Arnold's like, I could do this shit all day. And he was running, and he's trying to empty his sack
yeah.
to lose weight, and the letters are just going everywhere.
And I'm like, motherfucker's doing this on the clock. I get fucking fired for this shit.
That's what I was just about to say. Like, we're sitting there watching the movie. Tim is sitting next to me, and he goes, look at this fucking asshole shopping on the clock. Like,
that pisses me off, dude.
I was like, I know a fucking – the other thing he says
– scolding people about capitalism.
The other thing he says, we're sitting there watching it, he goes, he's just a fucking city carrier. He doesn't work nearly as hard as I do anyways.
That's fucking awesome. Somewhere there's a city carrier listening to this podcast and they just
they're
red
like,
with fire, right?
You
don't tell you fucking rural carriers.
Your car all
your drive
day.
All day not doing anything. Being all comfortable in your own fucking clothes, not wearing the monkey suit. Getting around.
Seriously,
any
postal workers that listen to this show, please, please email us. We want to have that.
I love all mail
Tim
carriers.
Hate mail.
I love all mail carriers.
That would be amazing if our only fucking hate mail was because of Tim.
It's just like, fuck you, rural carrier. That's like all it says. Kiss my ass driving a car all day.
I have plenty of friends that are city carriers, and my biggest debate is that I deliver like four times the customers they do in a day.
Sorry, guys. Listen to this guy. I don't hate people. I have a lot of friends that are city carriers.
They work hard in a different way.
Some of my best slaves are city carriers.
Yeah.
So it's a call back to a joke that wasn't on the episode.
Oh, side note, we forgot to do a video.
Besides, we only listen to
we'll do.
We need a Patreon video. We gotta
figure out a better way to do that. Anyways,
I think it's a thumbs up. I definitely think you should watch it if you've not seen this movie.
I'm thumbs up.
It's gonna be stupid. It's not gonna be Citizen Kane, you know. But it's worth a. It's funny.
Wait, what?
It's funny.
What?
A movie about chasing down a shitty toy starring Arnold Schwarzenegger isn't Citizen
Wait,
Kane?
Hold on. Isn't he all about that fucking sled at the end of the movie? It is the same
it
movie.
It is Citizen Kane.
It's funny. I mean, the cast is awesome. It's funny. It has its funny moments.
Steve, your unqualified opinion, having not watched it?
My qualified opinion was I went to go look at the movie, you know, notified on late notice, and then I saw the cover of it, and then I said, I'm not watching that.
So
what's
middle.
The cover? Isn't it just Arnold Schwarzenegger and Anakin Skywalker? Like,
yes.
Isn't it just them two?
Self-explanatory.
He was like, I'm out.
Is there pod racing in this?
It could have been about a Star Wars toy.
Oh.
That would have been weird.
Would have been worse.
Super meta.
Right? Could have been like a Terminator toy.
So I'm going to give this one a thumbs middle. Like, I don't hate this movie. I don't love this movie. But there's like... There's a very limited window where I would be willing to watch this movie, and it's definitely like
only during Christmas.
Only
time.
During Christmas time. Like, I would never be like, oh man, it's the middle of July. You know what I should watch? Jingle All the Way. Like, this is definitely like something.
You know, it's a great Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Jingle All the Way. Because it's a Christmas movie, it only fits into that like Christmas season,
right?
You know, so. It gets a thumbs middle because it's not like Tommy Boy where it's like so stupid and funny and you can just watch it whenever.
Right.
Like, it's just very specifically
I think that's
Christmas.
The problem with any kind Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Or a Thanksgiving movie or something like that. You don't really watch them at any other times.
I need there to be more movies with Phil Hartman in them, though. Like, yeah. It bums me out that
that's
he's
gonna
dead.
That's going to be a hard sell.
No, I'm just saying, like, I wish there were more movies with Phil Hartman. Like,
his TV, he
News
did,
Radio.
He did, that's, yes,
is
the show is
hilarious.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, with Phil Hartman and the dude from Kids in the Hall, whose name I can't remember
his name either.
Holy shit,
that's
that
a good
show is funny.
It took a weird
even
nose
though it
dive.
Has
they brought in what's his name after Phil Hartman died, the guy with the funny voice. Fuck, what's his name?
If only the internet were a thing.
Fuck.
Right now, Michael Kirk is
he
like
owns a comedy star. He owns
anger.
A the Hollywood Babylon used to do their show.
Love it.
Oh,
Love
John Lovitz.
Yeah.
the
guy with
guy
the funny
that
voice.
Hates. Yeah. Oh man. So yeah. Pretty good reviews for Jingle All the Way. I was actually kind of surprised that everybody actually sort of enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's a funny movie. Like
we
I said, you don't go into that movie going, the storyline to this movie is going to be amazing.
Steve doesn't like things.
That's why him and your dad are such good
Not
friends.
Not liking things
is
sort of my thing.
Precisely why we're such good friends is because we like to argue about how shitty everything is.
Well, what's interesting is this you used to more. Be me, and then you had a bunch of children, and you slowly slid to the other side.
No, I don't like that many
you,
things.
No, you yeah. like things now.
I do
you,
like some things.
You
just
like
not many.
Lots of things.
No, shut up. Not you.
So should we, let's take a break so we can do this interview and then come back to Scrooged.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Here's a few reasons why you should be listening to the Unwritable Rant podcast with host Juliette Miranda. She can tell a great story.
If you can't play dead... Play drunk. And it works, I swear.
She interviews celebrities that have great stories.
If we have a cousin that's kind of strange, we don't put him away or tuck him away. We set him on an old dryer out in the front yard with alcohol and let him wave at people.
right, and then you tell your friends about it.
And she's tolerant and loves kids.
So these kids go running up after the ball, and I stand up and I yell, "Kids die in the street all the time."
So head on over to theunwritablerant.com and listen to the show.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. On the line we have Scott Joseph, writer and artist of The Warren Hope. Scott, how are you today, man?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I got my nice hot cup of coffee here. here and chatting with you lovely dudes. So that's always good.
Nice. I'm lovely. I don't get that very often. I usually get, hey, hideous chud, shut up. So what we like to do is start off all of our interviews with kind of the same basic question. What's the origin story of the project? So Scott, tell us, what is the origin story of The War and Hope?
Well, I wanted to make a book that was something to do with the end times, but most books we read usually have to do with the aftermath or setting up to it. And I wanted something that kind of thrust us right into it, right in the middle of it. And as things are happening, and I was trying to find something to make it unique in the fact that we live in such a postmodern society that everything worthwhile has been done before. So I was looking at stuff like the Book of Revelations from the Bible and how hell on earth might look. And so I thought, you know what, this could be fun. I can use this as source material to inspire things and go from there. And then that way I have a clear beginning and end of where the process is going to take place. So we jump in 3.5 years into what would be called the time of tribulation. And that's supposed to last around 7 years, depending on what sources you want to go into. So I actually did some research into this, which is fun. And so now we have these humans that were sort of still on the surface, or in this case, under the surface, and how they deal with avoiding demons and their fiends and just trying to survive during this time period.
So what made you want to write a book about, you know, the biblical Christian end times? Like, what was kind of the driving force behind that?
I wanted to study people. And that's one thing that were like shows like The Walking Dead did really well in the book of Walking Dead. And a lot of things that we as consumers get into is stuff that we can sort of identify with. And dealing with these human traits like loss and longing and love and hunger. I have two kids. And so I constantly think about this thing of, if I'm trying to scrounge food and there is a room and there's a can of beans in the room and I come in through one door and you come in through the other one, what am I willing to do to provide for my kids? And so that's part of it. And then also, I'm a believer. So wanting to have something in there that reflected my faith-based system, but wasn't this cheesiness of it. Because there's lots of blood. There's lots of language that gets used in the story, and it's not this comfort blanket of the story. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Like, so what you're kind of trying to express is that, like, as you know, a person that has a specific set of beliefs, you want to like kind of put that out there, but you don't necessarily want to like bash people over the head with it. And
exactly,
you know, it has blood because they're fighting demons, and they swear because they're real people. Like,
exactly,
because people that don't swear or say they don't swear are fucking liars. Like,
exactly, that's how that works. That's exactly it. Well, we're all real people, you know, and I'm not out there trying to condemn people. That's not my job. No, I'm just trying to tell a story and to use this background as a setting to go with it.
So, The sample that you had provided us, I believe, went through issue 5, if I remember right.
Correct.
Sorry.
Correct.
I read them all, but I couldn't remember because I read them all just like in one sitting as opposed to like issue to issue. So, you know, you're revealing like kind of a lot of things all at once. You know, you have the main character who has, you know, some friends die pretty quick off the bat, so that's not like really a spoiler alert, but she ends up
It's really quick. It's like the fifth or seventh page. Yeah.
So she has to flee the safety of where she's been staying in this place called The Hub and go to this – she ends up in this place called Hope, okay, which is this – I mean, it almost seems like some kind of like dictatorial – like dystopia thing going on. And there's, you know, the tribunal, which is called the Vigil. Is that correct?
The Veil.
That is it. Sorry.
The Veil. Yeah. No, you're good. Vigil would have been a good name too.
Nice. They can be your antagonist for the next story arc.
Exactly.
So, there you go. So when she gets there, she's in this place called Hope. Like, tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're trying to go for with that community. Like, what kind of setting are you trying to put this these characters into? Because like the War and Hope sounds like it's going to end up, you know, as issues progress, being very centered around Hope specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Hope moving. So Hope right now, the underground city of Hope, everything's underground right now. The surface has been pretty much scorched. I envisioned in this setting, it's sort of contemporary, but still futuristic enough to where I can work things into it, like certain technology aspects. And so this is like an underground city that has sort of formed. And this group, the Vale, are these, as you said, like dictatorship that run the show. And that's me actually kind of poking fun of the Catholic Church a little bit, because a small group of people making the choices for the mass. I don't want to give too much away, but basically they're dealing with stuff that they shouldn't be messing with.
Right.
And so what I picture for Hope is now at this point, at the end of issue 4, Hope is going to start making changes. So now we have this thing of, well, there's stuff happening on, this is going to be totally spoilery. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay.
So there's a group, like a resistance force forming on the surface where they're like, you know what? No, we're going to try to fight these demons. We're going to try to take our land back because this is what's right. This is ours. What's the worst that's going to happen? We're going to die. I would rather die than be hungry. Like, that's sad. So we're going to see what happens with the Vale, see how they progress, and see what choices they need to make for the better of their people. Because after all, the Vale protects.
Right.
Which is an ongoing expression that they use. Yeah. Yeah, I think that answered it.
So you have like this big theme going on that's like has very much to do with like how do people react to like this intense and difficult situation, like when mm-hmm. when you're dealing with like such big ideas like interpersonal communication and faith and religion and like, you know, these cosmic ideas of like the creatures from hell and you know objects of power like come into play and stuff like that. Like, how do you kind of organize all of this as you're writing? Like, do you develop a lot of outlines for the scripting, or, you know, what is kind of the behind the scenes mechanism of how you keep, you know, the story organized?
That is a fantastic question. That is probably one of the best questions I've ever been asked. I actually have this thing that I call the compendium of the supernatural, divine, and the damned that I'm sort of working on. And it's like, have you ever played D&D, Dungeons and Dragons?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so you know the benefits of having like a monster manual, things like that. The Dungeon Master Guide. You have all these resources you can pull on, and so like for me, I'll just start drawing this little like concept creature or power item or things like that, and I need to stop pacing. I'm out of breath. My goodness. Okay, I'm like walking around my backyard. Yeah, so I try to compile the things. Everything starts as art first. So I studied art in college. I teach high school art. Everything centers around the art. Now, the art style in this book is different because a lot of it's monochromatic, black and white. But that's to kind of give the roughness of the situation and of the setting. So, yeah, everything starts as on paper, and then I just kind of compile it into this compendium that I'm kind of fleshing out. And I'm actually going to post the whole thing on my website here soon, just so people can pull from it. I would love for it to become like a board game or a role-playing game, you know, just something where you're trying to survive.
So you basically have like a Dungeon Master's Guide for your world.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's awesome. You have this guide, you're looking at it, you're kind of like, you know, parsing out like the story and deciding what you want to do. Mm-hmm. Like what do you feel like is influencing you? Like you said, you know, you've drawn from like the Book of Revelations and stuff like that, but there's so much information out there that, you know, you can be drawing from, like, you know, other books that, you know, have demonology or like, you know, mm-hmm. like you said, monsters manuals and stuff like that. Like, are you looking at other things to kind of pull this together, or do you feel like you're just kind of trying to draw directly from like effectively reading the Bible?
Yeah. Yes and no. So, for the main part, yes. Because there's a lot of like symbolism and the representation of angels, even in the Bible, which are amazing. I mean, some with multiple faces, some are a bunch of burning wheels. There's a lot of iconography that goes along with it. But then I also look at things like Cthulhu and stuff like that, where you'll see in volume two, which I'm plugging away on right now, we have these things called dreamers, which are fairly Cthulhu-esque, which come into play, trying to tap into this whole spiritual realm that goes along with it. Like, what are the things that influence dreams? Let's see what deals with that. How do we deal with grief? And how do these things worm into it and start to twist reality? No, I try to find inspiration everywhere, to be honest. Wherever I see something I like, I'll pick and choose and appropriate things that just work with the story.
That's cool. So obviously you've like played Dungeons and Dragons because you brought it up. You brought it up, so you're the bigger nerd than me.
Dude, Dungeons and Dragons kept me out of trouble growing up.
You know, it's hilarious. So I'm gonna ask a randomly personal question. How old are you?
I'm 34.
Okay, so you're not that much younger than me, but like when I was growing up, Dungeons and Dragons and heavy metal music and like all that stuff was obviously going to all take us into the route of satanic cults and suicide.
Right. Right.
As a person of faith, like I'm sure that your parents were an influence on that particular faith. Like my mom was definitely the lady that was like, you have Dungeons and Dragons books. We're going to take them, put them in a trash can and set them on fire. So, right. So I lost a lot of allowance money to my D&D books being set on fire. But all of that stuff was like a huge influence on the things that I enjoy, the comics that I read now, the music I listen to now, the movies and, TV that I watch now, like all of that kind of stuff, was a huge influence on me. When you were younger, it sounds like you kind of had that same diversity of influences, the works of H.P. Lovecraft, Dungeons and Dragons, like, and then layered that over what I assume you probably went to church and things like that.
Yeah. Do you want me to talk on that?
Actually is like, how do you feel like the combination of things like informs you like as an artist or a writer? Like, because for me, like I know that the things that I write can be very heavily like, nuanced in so many different directions because I liked all the stuff that everybody thought was evil in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. But I also went to like Christian school from the time I was in fourth grade till I graduated from high school. So like my base of knowledge is so bizarre that it creates like very odd things. And I was kind of curious, how does your varying influences push your art?
Ooh, I like that. You're good with these questions. It sounds like you are effectively my demographic with my comic.
Nice.
Which is cool. And that's rad.
Weird metal guys that went to too much church.
I was a punker, so nice. that was fun. But no, my parents were really cool about it. At first they were like, oh, D&D, scary, as most Christianese people are. But like my youth pastor, like they had me actually take the book to him and like show him and get his input. And he was like, he borrowed it for a week. It was a Rifts. Do you remember Rifts?
Yeah, absolutely. Rifts was amazing.
Even on the cover, there was like three almost naked women on it.
And, as all good fantasy should have, nearly naked women. Like
chainmail bikinis. That's the way it goes.
Right.
But he borrowed it for a week. He brought it back and he's like, all right, do you think it's real? And I was like, no, it's a game. And he goes, yeah, you're fine. Don't worry about it.
So there is an extraordinary amount of math in here.
No joke. And problem solving and critical thinking. This is what should be taught in Common Core, to be honest. That it is the epitome of Common Core. So yes, it all influenced what I do. I forgot your question. Oh, how did it all shape what I'm doing?
Yeah, like how does like your divergent influences like really shape like the direction, not just necessarily of this, but like of anything that you work on?
I think it makes it different. I work fairly clean for the most part because of the religious background with it. I think I'm going to be held responsible for whatever I do. So if I'm throwing out F-bombs and some teenage kid, everybody cusses, or I put something sort of blasphemous in the book and someone takes that as fact, then I personally feel that I'll be held responsible for that, even though it's just a comic book. Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird balance trying to make sense of things with it. but ultimately just whatever tells the story.
Nice. It's, you know, it's interesting. Like it's a weird space to be in because, you know, like I for one am like not a huge advocate of like holding things back. Like, and you know, I'm not worried about violence or sexuality or any of those things, but when
you, which will all be covered in the story too, by the way. I'm just saying, holding back.
The idea of like you take personal responsibility for the art that you create is something that I don't think necessarily a lot of people think about when they're creating art. And it's an interesting mm-hmm. and different perspective than most people have, I think. When you're looking at it, you know, you're saying that, you know, a weird guy like me is probably your key demographic, like guys that have, you know, an overarching understanding of like religion and then also are really into like people shooting demons with shotguns. Like, you know,
right. Like exactly.
This is so cheesy. Like I'm going to tell this story and I don't think I've ever talked about this, but my cousin and I, when we were in high school, used to make this comic book called Demon Slayer that was literally about this guy. Shit. Sorry, my friends are sitting here doing stupid things and it made me laugh. Sorry about that. Anyway, we used to do this comic called Demon Slayer that was about like this super Jesus-y guy that like went out and like actually like shot demons with shotguns, like Punisher style. So reading the comic book, I was like, oh, I remember writing this story, except for it wasn't in the apocalypse. Like it's funny. Like it's such a strange thing to see in general, because I don't think there's very much out there like this. You know, there's the idea of the elevator pitch. Like if you were trapped in an elevator for 2 minutes with like, you know, the head of, you know, Dark Horse right. Comics or something, like how would you pitch this book to people?
It's the end times. Mankind's only chance of survival rests in its ability to trust one another and to have each other's back. Meanwhile, demons roam the earth and their hounds of hell work to help. That works. That was quick. That was lame.
People got to fight the demons.
People got to stand up. The only way this is going to work is if we get together, if we work together. So there's sort of, I don't do politics. It's not my, I don't study politics, but basically the world would be a whole lot better if people just shut up. that's about my political stance right there. People just need to shut up.
I'm definitely a big fan of the only thing that's ever going to bring us together, like as a global community, is if something apocalyptic happens, like alien invasion, yeah. Zombie apocalypse. Like, oh, I guess we're all going to have to work together now, or we're all going to die. So
yeah. Oh, so interesting thing on that with all people. I realize after the first issue, all the characters were white, and which, I mean, there's only like six people, but there was an awareness that kicked in during that. And because I was reading through it, and I was like, wait a minute, there's no change in anyone's appearance. Like this is not good. So that had a huge thing with Chacal coming in, who's a Mexican American dude. And I was teaching in a mostly migrant community at that point when I was writing issue two. It's that character is sort of a love note to those people, because I wanted to try to diversify it, but not force diversity, because forced diversity is stupid. So stupid. You don't just throw it in there for the sake of throwing it in there because, oh, I have to meet the quota. So we have things happening. Did you read clear through?
I made it to the end this morning.
Okay.
I finished the fifth one this morning.
perfect. So there's like the relationship between Ariel and Clara is kind of, are they a couple? Are they not? Which is interesting. I've had people ask me, they're like, are they a couple? And they're both female characters.
Right.
And I'm like, well, that's ambiguous for a reason. And so that's up to you. But designing the characters and that trying to get that diversity, but not forced diversity, was extremely weird and difficult. And I'll share this. This is kind of interesting. So from a designer aspect, Corinthian, who appears in the fifth installation, is this toga wearing sci-fi helmet angel sword wielding dude who fights demons, who actually squares up to demons and goes for it. He's based on a friend of mine who's a comedian, Clayton Thompson, CT. He was just on HBO last night, or two nights ago, it was rad.
Oh, nice.
Clayton Thomas, not Thompson, Thomas. I feel like a tool bag now. But anyway, originally, I mean, I was thinking about how do you fight. You don't want to go squared up. Maybe use like a spear. But then you have to be aware of everything and how people take it. Like I was talking earlier, do I really want a black dude throwing a spear? Right? See that right yeah. there. And I realized, I was like, oh, no, you can't do this. You can't do this. This is, even though that wasn't my intention.
Yeah, that is definitely a moment where you're like, oh, this is a terrible idea.
Yeah, no, this doesn't work. So let's give him a big sword instead. That works. But then, yeah, just there's a lot of tiptoeing because you everybody's offended by everything now. So it's, awareness is key there.
So I
forgot what we were talking about.
No, it's interesting because you're fine. It's interesting because, you know, you feel personal responsibility for the art you create. And so you have like this awareness where, you know, so honestly, I noticed that everybody in the first issue was white just because there's very little shading to them. I was like, wow, mm-hmm. that's kind of cool. Like it makes them look super stark. Like it makes them look, you know, very like washed out, like, and it felt like they were in the underground. So I noticed it significantly more when a character was colored in. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. oh, they're white because they're like white. I get it. Like, you know, so that's
right.
There was like a moment where, you know, you're talking about not creating like forced diversity and like trying to just have like these communities of people that look like normal communities of people, because like literally at the table I'm sitting at, you know, there's a various range of brown starting at pink and going to dark, you know?
Exactly.
So
exactly.
There's this interesting thing where I would never have thought of that until, you know, it was placed in the comic, you know, like you said, through, you just said his name too. And I forgot.
Corinthian.
That's it. Where yep. he's placed in it and he's singing the song in Spanish and like all of this stuff
oh,
is
no,
happening.
Chacal. That's Chacal. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Chacal. And then the lady that's I'm so bad with names, but the lady that's kind of like the guide, for the new people when they first go to meet, the kind of tribunal of guys.
Burke, the ginger haired.
Yeah. Like there's these subtle hints of color that like lend themselves to, hey, look at this. And it makes the characters stand out a little bit more, but mm-hmm. in an interesting, subtle way that it's cool. Like, I don't know. It's an interesting book because it's black and white, but not black and white. Like all the blood is red, you know, certain people are their skin tone, but everything else is just so starkly black and white. Except for when they're, you know, fighting big battles and there's fire and stuff. I think that's kind of cool. It's like all of the aggressive things are very brightly colored.
Well, because it's aggressive.
Yeah.
And that's color theory coming into play. And thank you. Thank you for that. That was really nice.
Oh, you're welcome.
I like the words that you just said.
I try to say good words sometimes. So you had mentioned that you're a teacher.
Yeah.
Have any of your students read the book or?
Yes, actually. So I actually teach at a private Christian school, which is nuts. And I love it.
As a graduate from a private Christian school, I will say, yes, it's nuts.
Oh, I love it. I love it. No, my kids, a few of my kids have actually bought the book and have tried, like actually discussed it with me, which is rad because it's like when I said earlier, you're my demographic. I wrote this and I'm writing it currently for teenage me is basically who I'm aiming at, because I mean, if you're not enjoying it, what's the point? But, a few of my kids have read it. Some of the administration has read it. And what's really cool is I had just last week, I'm doing a thing on character design. So I teach art, high school art. And, I was doing a thing on character design. So they're coming up with their own characters. It's basically a figure study, but with more substance to it. And, I had a picture of my angels and my demons up on my TV in the room. And as it's up there and I'm talking about them, one of the administration comes in for an observation. So I'm like, oh crap. Like, okay, let's see how they deal with me actually talking about my books in class. And ultimately it was amazing. Like I had a super good review from it because it's all about details. And then I said something actually of substance that was who we are is in the details. Yeah, it was cool. Like, and the kids love it, man. The kids love seeing that I'm actually doing something with art. That it's not just all talk. There's substance behind it.
It's like, it's the exact opposite of when you tell your math teacher, when am I ever going to use Algebra 2 again?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So you said the administration hasn't freaked out about it at all?
No, I think they love it, actually. Nice. Well, it's arts. Art's one of those things where if you get stuck in an old mentality of things, an older mentality, not old, you can't reach the kids. And so I think by me having experience actually doing art in the real world with this, like with comics, actually putting effort into it and actually making something contemporary, they see the benefits of it. It's not all just oil painting and acrylic painting and sculpture. You know, it's art is so varied. Yeah, I think that's what they like about what I'm doing with it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, Scott, tell everybody how they can find your comic online, get a hold of it, and read up on it themselves.
Awesome. Yeah. So you can head over to Fuzzy Joseph, FuzzyJoseph.com. I have the first two issues up there for free. Just click on the Warren Hope tab. And let's see what else. Social media, Instagram, Fuzzy Joseph, and everything that's social media is Fuzzy Joseph. It's my nickname when I worked in a tattoo shop. So I kept that Fuzzy. It's adorable when little kids say it and huge bikers. It's... That's quite the range. But yeah, they can find it there. It's on Comixology. Issues 1 through 5 are on there. I should have all the inked artwork done by January 1st for volume 2. So that'll be issues 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10.
Nice.
Oof. Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. But you know what's cool is that it's a labor of love. You know, if you want to make comics, make comics.
That is
right. I mean, the only thing stopping you is you.
That's definitely our ethos here. Like, if you have something that you want to do, just do it. Like, stop pissing and moaning about how you can't do it, and just get it done. So,
exactly.
Because one day,
share your art.
Because one day, Juan conned me into doing a podcast, and 3 years later, we're interviewing you. So,
right there, you go.
That's awesome. Well, Scott, thanks so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it, and like. Yeah, I'm interested to see where the storyline goes, that's for sure.
Awesome. Thanks a bunch. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
What is up, future listener? My name is Josh.
And I'm Kevin.
And I am Michael. And we host the Second Press Podcast, that news curating podcast where us three cousins get together and make fun of the news.
We'll keep this short and sweet. You should listen to our podcast because it's funny and informative.
Exactly. We find interesting stories off the beaten path and liven up overreported stories with our own fresh views and new takes.
Yeah, and despite being a news podcast, we are pleasantly not preachy at all.
So, search for the Second Press Podcast in your podcast aggregator of choice and give the Second Press Podcast a listen.
You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Second Press Pod.
And if you're feeling really adventurous, you can explore our sexy website at www.secondpresspod.com.
We would really love for you guys to give us a listen and join our growing community.
Guys, we already love you, and because we do, we ask you, please stay out of the news.
Peace.
O'clock. Psycho sees Santa's workshop, and only Lee Majors can stop them. In the night the reindeer die. Be here.
You can't show that commercial. That thing looked like the Manson Family Christmas special.
Think I'm way off base?
Yes, you're a tad off base, sir.
Frank Cross is more than the youngest network president in television history.
Call security. Have them change his locks and toss him out of the building.
Oh, he's fired? It's Christmas.
Thank you. Call the county. Stop his bonus.
Watch out.
He's a thoughtful boss.
Thanks, boys. Get the nurse.
A generous brother.
What did he give you last year?
I don't remember.
A shower curtain. Ma'am, I think you dropped something here.
And a true humanitarian.
I can't get the antlers glued onto this little guy. We've tried crazy glue.
Have you tried staples?
But his life is about to change.
Woo-wee! That was a good one.
You are going to be visited by three ghosts tomorrow at noon.
Now, tomorrow's bad for me, Lou. As a matter of fact, the whole rest of the week is a washout. Now,
anyone who thinks he hates Christmas is wrong.
Jersey, you moron!
It's ghosts he hates.
I love that bit!
I'm the ghost of Christmas present.
Bill Murray. Karen Allen.
It sounded like you'd seen a ghost.
A ghost?
John Forsythe. Bobcat Goldthwait.
Hey! You'd rather see me, or is this a shotgun in your pocket? You know this one?
Everybody knows this one. Let's go now.
Now, does everybody know this one?
Carol Kane. Robert Mitchum.
I really care.
David Johansen.
Oh, I'm having the weirdest day.
See Bill Murray get Scrooged.
Hey. Back off, big man. That may work with the chicks, but not with me.
Come on. He'll just yell, and we're back.
Then he decides to come.
Jesus Christ.
In side note, we're recording.
In his anime.
And we're back. Or wait, that's not my job.
Yeah, it is now. Good job.
And we're back.
We did it.
Thank you for joining us again on Yay. Dick Swinger's Appreciation Hour.
On WKXPN. NPR.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
The Dick Swinging Network.
Dude, that is an underrated TV show.
Goddamn right.
That show is fucking hilarious.
God as my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
Like, I hadn't watched it until I saw it, like, for years, until I saw an article about the Thanksgiving episode of WKRP, and so I looked it up on YouTube, and that was genuinely some of the funniest shit I've ever watched.
My parents used to watch that show, and I watched it with them all the time.
That and MASH. Anyways.
Yeah, which is a shit ton of MASH.
So, pop culture classic worst. 2, pretty sure that you just listened to the trailer of Scrooge.
Yes!
1988, directed by Richard Donner, starring Bill Murray. Karen
Richard Donner? Oh, shit, I didn't know that.
What?
It was Richard Donner.
Yeah, it's a Richard Donner movie. Bill Murray, Karen Allen, Bobcat Goldthwait, Carol Kane.
Bobcat Goldthwait.
Goldthwait.
Hey, man, if you can't do the voice, you got
it. Yeah, close enough. I can't really do it.
So, a little bit of trivia.
He directs really good movies now. Sorry to keep interrupting.
He does. And he's fucking hilarious on stuff like At Midnight and everything.
Yes.
Like, yeah. The guy's really
Is that his real
funny.
Voice?
And he filmed, no.
It is sort of his real voice. Like, when he talks.
You can hear it a little
you
bit.
You can hear it a little
bit. But
it was
a complete
but
affectation.
It's definitely. Especially in, like, the
also,
Police Academy
less
movies.
Less coke now.
I like cocaine.
Like, if you've seen a special on Netflix for comedy, he probably directed it.
Trivia. Carol Kane grabbed Bill Murray's lips so hard in, like, the scene where she's slapping him around that they actually had to stop filming for a few days because she tore his lip.
Wow.
She's the best part of this whole fuck.
Hashtag
she
me too.
Is one
she's
of the
best ghost for
by
sure.
By far. Yeah. All of Bill Murray's brothers are in this film at some point. He has three brothers that make cameos. Like, I don't even think most of them have lines, but he made sure they all got a job at least one time. And then
I was in a Bill Murray movie.
You're Bill Murray's brother. Of course you were in a fucking Bill Murray movie. Shut up. Bill Murray and Richard Donner did not get along. Like, and to the point where Bill Murray in an interview talked about how all Richard Donner would ever tell him to do is be louder and louder and louder. And he thought he was probably just deaf. So, but apparently they bickered through the whole filming of this. And Richard Donner was just trying to, like, get this movie done as quickly as possible. So sometimes if a scene seems rushed, it's because they literally did, like, one take, move on kind of thing. So there was a
Bill
lot
Bill Murray is really weird, though,
there,
too.
There was a lot of set tension, which probably, yeah, was largely caused by Bill Murray being a weirdo. But there's a lot of – apparently a lot of set tension in this movie. And I think sometimes it comes across. Like, it's not – the best Bill Murray movie, but it's definitely
I really like it.
Because, you know.
It's one of my favorite Christmas movies.
Garfield. this is probably, I was talking to Tim yesterday. This is definitely in my top five Christmas movies. This is a good one. I don't know.
I've seen it, but it's not in my top five. It's not in my pantheon. It's up there, but it's mainly like the top 10.
How many fucking Christmas movies do you like and watch?
A bunch, dude.
Charlie Brown.
Sound of Music, motherfucker. What's wrong with you?
Oh, man. Neither of those movies are in my top five. Fuck both of those movies.
How do you solve a problem like Gabe?
What?
You hate it first, and then you experience it, and then you're like, all right, it's not actually that bad.
I hate Sound of Music, correct.
What, because you love Nazis?
Yes,
because he loves Nazis.
No, I hate Sound of Music because my mom and I watch it like three times a year. It's like Fiddler on the Roof and Sound of Music were like the only two movies my mom was ever interested in watching. So those were the movies we watched. And as a consequence, I can't fucking stand it.
Because she loved Nazis. Yes,
she loves Nazis.
This film ends so sadly every time.
Why do the Nazis always have to lose? They don't. Watch Iron Sky. The movie's amazing. I don't know. This was... I don't know. Whose pick was this? Was this
John's?
John's.
Yeah.
Good thing he's not.
I think it was John's because I think we... I can't remember.
We called out both movies last episode.
Well, we called one movie out and then we were going to do it. And then John... I think John came and he said the other movie. And we're like, ooh, we should watch both of those movies.
Yeah.
But I can't remember in what order. I just put that episode out too and I can't remember.
So Scrooge is hilarious. Like if you haven't seen it, it's just a retelling of A Christmas Carol starring Bill Murray. It takes place in the 80s. There's dancers with nipples. Like you can hardly see their nipples.
You could hardly see their nipples.
Which apparently was an ad-libbed line too.
And they're really trying.
it's hilarious. Like it's Bill Murray, like kind of not at his very, very best, but definitely like at the height of his game. It's not too far after Ghostbusters. Like I remember the marketing for this. It was like Ghostbusters, Bill Murray, and like a Christmas, you know, ghost story. Like there was definitely like weird tie-ins in the marketing that were like, by the way, Bill Murray deals with ghosts again.
Remember
how funny Ghostbusters was? Guys, watch Bill Murray in these Ghostbusters Christmas.
This time, the ghosts bust him.
Oh, man, they probably could have gotten away with that. But it's hilarious. This movie's stupid funny. Like, and then the end is like so sentimentally sappy that it gets me every time because...
Everything gets you.
You're a big marshmallow.
I am a giant marshmallow.
Fucking soft, doughy bastard.
Fucking get my cream filling all over your face, neck, and chest.
Thanks, what? Kevin.
What? I can say that too. Everybody can say face, neck, and chest. You didn't trademark it yet.
Yeah, bitch.
Ow. That's how it feels.
Trademark.
We're all waking up. We're all waking up from our interview naps.
I know. I told you guys, go upstairs and talk with each other while I interview this guy.
Masturbate each other.
What?
Circle jerk?
Sophia.
Oh, hi, Sophia. Why does this always happen?
You are a bad person.
It's true. I'm not gonna fight you on that.
So, you guys talk about it. What was your favorite?
Don't tell
part?
Me.
I would talk about
do.
It. I didn't see it because again, late notice and
you
not
talk
enough
about
time.
It. Don't tell me. I talk about our fucking pop culture.
It's a Christmas Carol, right?
It is basically a Christmas Carol. Okay.
I really liked it. Like I said, the ghost of Christmas Present is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, Carol Kane.
I think she's the same lady from Princess Bride, right?
Yes.
Who, go, you know, with
I'm not a witch. I'm your
wife. Yeah, with what's Billy Crystal? Yeah.
So I do have a question about
have
this.
Fun
so. Does this movie fall into that same, apparently not for you because you really liked it, into that same like it was funny when it was the 80s and now it's not the 80s and now it's less funny because comedy has become more sophisticated for lack of a better term? Or is it good in that pure sense because it's just fucking funny?
It is genuinely just funny. Mm. Like Bill Murray has this ability to largely transcend like generational joking. Like, Ghostbusters is still hilarious.
Goddamn, that movie's Scrooge fucking amazing.
Scrooge is still really, really funny. Like, Caddyshack is still a 70s movie. Mm. And I think that largely has to do with, like, the surrounding cast and, like, just kind of this idea. Like, people don't – like, normal people aren't like, I'm going to go to the golf course for the week. You know?
I mean, you aren't, but
– Stripes.
Yeah. They're
quality, funny ass, like
Stripes
military
is just
spoof.
Solid, funny. Mm. And I think a lot of it has to do with just Bill Murray's innate ability to be ridiculously funny.
Gotcha.
Like, just kind of any situation, even like, so you take like a very strange movie like Jim Jarmusch's Coffee and Cigarettes, right? Where it's literally just people sitting at tables, drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, and kind of riffing off of each other.
Right.
So you have like these famous musicians and famous actors all doing that. And Bill Murray gets paired with like members of the Wu-Tang Clan. And they're drinking coffee and eating cigarettes at – or smoking cigarettes at –
eating cigarettes.
I know. It's so weird.
It's a Bill Murray
it's
move.
It's crazy what gangsters do. Like, they're smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee at this diner, and their waiter walks up and it's Bill Murray.
Mm.
And he gives them coffee and they're like, oh, holy shit, you're Bill Murray. He's all – hey, no, shh. And they're like, are you studying for a role?
Was it an
like,
Andy Kaufman bit?
No, they're like, it's the movie. They're like, are you practicing for a role? He's like, nah, this is just something I like to do sometimes.
Well, that was the Andy Kaufman used to do that.
Oh, I guess I don't know that.
Yeah, he would go. He was
I find
a he
Andy
would go.
Kaufman largely unfunny.
Me too. But he would go to like dish because that's just the job he wanted. He didn't want anything, so he would just go bust tables.
Nice. Yeah, I guess
anyway,
it probably
sorry,
is kind was... of that, but or like a. Bill Murray has a show out now where he's traveling to all of the nation's minor league baseball parks and just fucking with people at the baseball park. Like, you know, he interviews the baseball players and like they watch the game, but he's there with like his buddy and they just
fuck around
at the baseball
game.
And like the show, you remember the show Fishing with John?
No.
So there used to be this show called Fishing with John where it was like this dude named John and he would take people
out on the boat.
On the boat to go fish with him, and ostensibly it was like this interview
show. It's like Between Two Ferns, kind of.
Exactly. It was this interview show where they would do fishing, but then everything would get like really weird and like not work. Well, Bill Murray does that like in this baseball show.
It's like comedians in cars getting coffee.
Exactly. It's a lot like that. Like, so Bill Murray has this innate ability to put himself into effectively any situation and just be the class clown that's funny
be
and
weird.
Yeah, he's just weird
enough
and funny
and witty enough that he's just
so,
moves it along.
So they say, hey, let's do a Christmas Carol with Bill Murray, and everybody goes, I guess that'll work. And Bill Murray goes, we're making this work. Like,
it works.
It's funny. The dude's fucking hilarious. Like,
I'm sure Bill Murray could do like any movie he wanted to.
He could, and instead
like
he chooses to do super weird shit. Like,
well, we've talked about it on the show before. He's the one of the few actors that he doesn't really have an agent, and he has a phone line.
Yeah,
and if you want him in something, you have to reach out and see if he'll answer. Yeah. And he hardly ever reaches out. And so there's been a couple of times where he goes back and he's like, oh shit, I should have taken that movie, but it's too late because he's not interested in that anymore.
He's just doing
what
he wants to do.
He wants
exactly.
to do.
And, like, and as a consequence, he does like amazing things like crashes somebody's wedding party like in Las Vegas. You know, he'll be in Las Vegas for the weekend and he'll see that there's like a wedding reception going on. And he'll be like, I'd like to make a toast. And everybody turns around. They're like, holy fuck, that's Bill Murray. Like, everybody's immediately pulling out their cell phones, you know. So his just ability to do that, to be
he's just
the
a funny motherfucker
in any situation, like makes it so that he can make a movie like this that's just fucking hilarious. Like,
yeah.
And then ostensibly also like really moving. Like, you know, you get to the end.
Marshmallow.
And, well, no, you get to the end and it's the Christmas Carol story where he realizes that by being a piece of shit, he is negatively affecting other people's
that
lives.
That is the wrong message.
And so
that movie ends terribly. You know who's happy? The guy with all the fucking money. You know who's less happy? What they don't show you is the day after he gave all that shit away and he's like, I have made a terrible mistake.
He's still got a lot of money.
A Christmas Carol Part 2, Scrooge clawing it back. Hey, you remember that turkey I gave you? I'm going to need the leftovers.
No, it's great.
They're perfect leftovers.
It's good because he doesn't.
I will punch you in the eye.
He doesn't tell jokes. He's like Jerry Seinfeld in the sense that a lot of the stuff they do, it's situationally funny. It's not them trying to tell a joke and be funny. You know what I mean? It's different. It's a different kind of comedy that I enjoy. I don't have to wait for the punchline. It's just shit going on around him that's just fucking crazy.
You know who else is really good at that in general? Not all the time. I feel like not nearly as consistently is Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell doesn't always tell a joke. He's just funny in that situation. Right. Like there's a certain person that's always fun to hang around because they're just fun and they're funny in every situation that you're in, as opposed to the person that's constantly like telling actual jokes.
Right.
It's like the comedian that was on the podcast that wasn't funny because he kept trying to tell jokes instead of just being funny. Like it's, and that's not something that you can teach. People either like have the ability to have a good humor and be good natured with people and make people laugh that are around them, and other people try to tell jokes and you're like, shut up.
Yeah, the new terrible at this. The new Will Ferrell movie, the Daddy Come Home to
Daddy's
or something
home.
Like that.
Yeah.
It's so fucking weird, but the cast is so huge and stacked that it's fucking funny. Like Will Ferrell and his dad, they kiss on the lips every time they hug and shit. Like it's really awkward, and that's what's so funny about it.
See, and that's what I'm talking about. That's not a setup. Right. There's no joke. There's no punchline. It's just so fucking weird that
I haven't seen the movie, but the trailer when it's like Mark Wahlberg and Mel Gibson, they're both like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. Well, and the first one, like we talked about the first one a little bit last episode, and I was talking to you about it a little bit last night. The first one's fucking hilarious. Like, and it shouldn't be.
God,
like, what a stupid premise for a movie. Like, Mark Wahlberg, big tough dad, comes home to like step all over stepdad, you know, and push him out of the way. It's so dumb. It sounds like a fucking – it sounds like a John Hughes movie, like a B-level John Hughes movie.
Wait, hold on. Are you smack-talking John Hughes?
No. I'm saying
okay.
Like there's a –
we're still friends.
John Hughes, I love his movies, but there's a very like, this is how the movie goes.
Yes.
Okay, and it feels like it should be that, and instead it just goes all over the place. You're like, oh, this is a train wreck. This is amazing. I love train wrecks.
It's funny. I mean, there's a part in the movie where they're chopping down trees, a real tree for their place
for
that
Christmas,
they're staying.
Yeah.
And they don't notice that it's a cell phone tower, and he fucking chops down a whole cell phone tower. And there's like cop rangers and shit. And the next scene is the fucking top of the cell phone tower decorated in their home, and they're talking about $30,000 and how, oh, you can't cut me a break because they're charging him for this fucking thing he just chopped down. And they're like, no, that's old technology and shit. And it's just so retarded to see a fucking cell phone tower tree in the middle of this giant cabin that they're in. It's fucking stupid, but it's funny.
For the record, I one time accidentally hit, like I was in a car accident and my car hit a light pole and knocked it over. They charge you for that shit.
Oh, yeah.
It's fucking awful.
Wow.
Light poles cost $5,000.
He's like, Christ, you can't cut me a break? No. Cell phone stuff has changed so much. This is old.
Going back to Scrooge though, like, so this ability for like Bill Murray to like play off of the cast and like work with him, in spite of the fact that he has like this difficult situation with, you know, Richard Donner, who is also like a phenomenal director. Like, so obviously they just kind of butt heads. Like, it happens. You don't always get to work with somebody that you enjoy working with. In spite of all of that, just Bill Murray's innate abilities make this movie. Like, they make it good. You know,
even when he's yelling at the dead guy, like, I'm like, it's sad because you're like, fuck, that dude froze to death, and he's so like angry at him, but you can tell he's trying not to be sad
upset.
As well.
Yeah,
it's a tough scene to go through.
When he gives his speech at the end, you know, about caring for other people and like the actual spirit of the season, like, it comes across as so heartfelt because it doesn't feel like he's ever been acting.
Right.
It feels like that's just how he is. Like, you know, sometimes he can be an absolute prick. Sometimes he's fucking hilarious. And then when he has this change of heart, like, it feels like a genuine change of heart. Like, which speaks not just to like Bill Murray's comedic skills, but just in
but
general
speaks to skills. Us all.
Well, I mean, yeah, asshole. But like, if you look at a movie like Lost in Translation, it's not like funny. There's moments where Bill Murray is funny.
I love that movie.
But it's just Bill Murray is just a good fucking actor. Absolutely. You know, he probably could have done anything that he wanted to do. So now he does.
Telenovelas.
Which is that would be amazing. How many hours of a Bill Murray telenovela would you watch? Especially if everybody was speaking Spanish except for Bill him. Murray.
It'd be fucking amazing. Holy shit.
We need to find Bill Murray's number and call him and pitch that.
I got this great idea for a telenovela.
Where it's like a regular telenovela, but you speak English.
And we're going to play it off like you're speaking Spanish.
Or it's like the Bill or the going back to Will Ferrell. It's like that Will Ferrell movie. I think it's called like Casa de mi Padre.
Oh, yeah. Where he like he's a sheriff or some shit, isn't he?
No, he's like his dad's ranch. The dad dies and he has to take over the ranch, and it's filmed like a telenovela. Will Ferrell speaks Spanish through the whole thing. He doesn't know any fucking Spanish, and like he's literally just like phonetically saying the words. He had to be like coached.
That's awesome.
How to phonetically say the words. Everybody else speaks fluent Spanish, and there are moments in the movie where you're like, he has no fucking idea what's going on right now. That movie got panned, I think, critically. That movie's fucking amazing. Like, if you haven't seen it, it is hilarious and weird. So weird.
I like your wrestling sign, by the way.
I know, me too.
I just noticed that myself.
I'm about to steal it.
That is direct from Mexico.
Just like you.
I'm indirectly from Mexico.
I want a luchador mask so bad.
There was some swimming and then some womb swimming. So.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
You were in the Navy? Funny. You were a seaman.
In the Navy.
Thumbs up.
Oh, yeah. For sure, thumbs up. Thumbs I love up. This movie.
I don't think Tim saw it.
I've seen it.
He's seen it.
Seen he just it. It's been not a long saw time. It, bitch.
I synced it.
I synced it.
I hate you.
I
also did not watch this movie, so I agree. Bill Murray's funny.
We should have had John on this part of the show.
Thumbs up. I've seen the fucking movie. God damn it.
Shit.
Steve gives a thumbs up for Bill Murray's fucking funny as hell. It doesn't really matter what he's in. So
even Garfield.
It's the life of
randomly, Steve's that movie's actually not half bad.
Never like, seen it.
I had to see Garfield because I have children. And they're like, let's watch
the Did you hear the story movie. That he did it because he thought that there was a different guy making it who had the same name as a guy who he really likes, and then it ended up being a totally different dude?
No, but that
and
is
so
awesome.
So he's like, oh, shit. I'm already committed
it's
to
all
this.
Too late now.
He did his best. He did his best with what he was given. I mean, it's a movie about an orange cat that eats lasagna. No matter who's directing it, it's going to be a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, the source material's not even that great. Like,
there's no fucking spot lasagna source good. Material. When it's just strips.
When did Garfield stop being funny? When you were in, like, fourth grade. Like,
yeah.
So, man, I used to check out Garfield books from the library.
Me too. Those
like,
long ones with all the different colors. Yeah.
The strip books. Oh, so funny.
I used to check out some strip books. What's next? Do you remember?
Yes. So this is Doyle.
I can't wait.
Doyle the producer's pick.
Duh. Like, Doyle the producer.
Oh, my bad. I thought
Come
it was
on.
The
no. D-A like apostrophe.
Well, I thought it was T-H-A, but apparently.
Oh, was it the? That's was it the? Or did
remember.
We put duh?
Is this
fuck,
something that fucking
remember.
Matters at
yeah,
all?
Yeah, it, it does.
Have you met Doyle? It's duh.
It's duh.
If we get it wrong,
Doyle,
he'll punch me. He'll punch me in the fucking face.
Doyle's not gonna punch you in the face.
You're faster than him.
Have you listened to the newest episode?
I'm having this flashback.
There's going to be a swimming competition, and it's going to be amazing.
I can't fucking wait. I almost forgot.
John the Aquaman fan and Doyle the Namor fan.
Wow.
As the final arbiter of which seaman's the best.
Namor, duh.
Aquaman or Namor. Yeah, but the avatar for Namor is Doyle. Like, I don't even know if Doyle can swim.
Hashtag not my avatar.
Hashtag not my neighbor.
Oh, all these great ideas
he said he
from
could
the last
swim.
Episode.
He said he could swim.
Yeah, because he can float just like I can.
Oh, shit.
exploding is not swimming.
Gabe's dead.
Just so you know, there's a history of animosity between Steve and Doyle that dates back nearly a decade.
I love Doyle.
I know you do, but there's like, there's how many? Okay, this is.
Does this have anything to do with what we're doing?
Inside yes, baseball.
So, Doyle and Steve and I and our friend Bobby, and our friend Cliff. Used to get together and play Magic the Gathering all the time. And there were so many moments where, like, we're all friends. Like, I'm still friends with all of these people. But so many nights I was like, God damn it, I fucking hate you, Doyle, like, because of a stupid card game. Or like, Cliff, if I would have had three more turns, I would have totally whipped your ass. It's like, but you didn't have three more turns because I fucking beat you. Like, that's how this game works. Oh my God, that's amazing. So it's funny to see the rivalry rekindle between Steve and Doyle. Doyle's going to listen to this episode and be like, I knew I should have fucking been there.
Yeah, that episode came out yesterday. It did. The newest episode came out yesterday.
So Doyle, the producer, has graced us.
Challenged!
With the privilege
yes.
of watching the first Men in Black movie, which is, like, it's I'm going to say right now, really good movie. I'm excited to watch it again. I need sugar and water. Vincent D'Onofrio in a
oh my God, he's so good in that. Oh, like I was listening to him, might have been on like Mark Maron or something like that, and this is probably a better save for the next podcast when you talk about it, but like he kept coming back to the director and saying like, can you make it more ridiculous? Like most of that is just him with like one eyeball like taped up, and the director's like, doesn't that hurt? He's like, yeah, but can you make it more? I want it to look cooler. And so like that horrible visage he has is mostly his face.
Like I'm gonna talk about this a lot more on the next episode, but his character in that movie is genuinely the most like grating, like disgustingly obnoxious things that when I'm watching it, I'm just like, catch him and kill him. I want him to go away. Like it's amazing.
It's an Egger suit.
It's amazing how visceral of a reaction I have to like Vincent D'Onofrio in that movie.
God, I love that guy.
It's great. He's
doing the Lord's work,
too. Yeah, holy
from
shit.
From fucking Private Pile to everything else.
Oh, dude.
Him is fucking Kingpin. Kingpin.
Oh, my God. So good.
Yeah. Jesus Christ, that show's awesome. I kind of want to rewatch Daredevil season 1.
Oh, tasty.
I still have to watch Punisher, though.
It's good. Anyway. I need to do that, too.
It's good.
Take a break and come back with some old man picks.
Yeah, dick picks.
Lemon.
Jingle bell.
See, I know this podcast too.
Jingle all the way.
Hey there, we are the LWAF podcast.
I am Joe.
And I'm Nick.
Each week we select two films from the Netflix library and then we discuss them.
You know, Joe, it's been over 20 years since we graduated from film school together and now we have a podcast show for it.
And usually we disagree about movies. But even when we disagree about why we agree.
I disagree.
You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and at the Castify.fm website.
And you can find us and follow us on our own website, lwafpod.com.
Fucking Merry episode. Christmas, everybody! We're back!
You can fucking open with doll fucking. You didn't hear that. I love that you just point at her and tell her you didn't hear that, as though somehow that's going to take her... Take it out of her mind that you said that sentence.
Hoping the fear, but I'm not that scary.
You're not. They like you too much.
Some things I mean, in kind of a hobo unseen. Kind of way, but.
Yeah. Oh, man.
We're recording again, by the way.
Yeah, we're back. Did John
the Christmas
get back
episode?
To you?
No, now he didn't get back to me.
Ah, oh, that guy.
So I'm ready, and then I was like, okay, he's finishing in 10 minutes, and then
cricket,
nothing
cricket.
Anymore.
Yeah.
Because he's like, yeah, I'm good. I'll be around. And that was why you're doing your interview.
John's old man pick is that he had Christmas when he was a child. Yay! Merry Christmas, Christmas episode. Okay, we're done with John's pick. I didn't know what to say.
This is a weird Christmas episode, by the way.
I know. Our last Christmas episode wasn't really a Christmas episode
I
either.
Don't remember.
God bless so us, long. Everyone.
Yeah, this is what we'll do. At the beginning...
This is what I'll do?
Yeah.
Is what you're telling me?
At the beginning...
We will do nothing.
Listen, there's a da producer, there's also a da servant.
How much music of a copyrighted song can you play before you have to pay
for
royalties?
Is Christmas music copyrighted?
I think most of it is.
Like Jingle Bells and shit?
I was going to say, like, you should either find, like, a public domain song and play it before this episode just to indicate that this is the Christmas episode. Or play, like, the appropriate amount of music before we get charged, which I think is, like, five seconds.
I think it's 30 seconds.
30
actually.
Seconds, I think. Yeah. As long as you make commentary about it, then you're open again.
So we got to make – we can't just use it. We got to use it and then talk about
it. No, this is what you do. You get Carol the Bells, but you get it by the guy that's Ding Fry. Are done, which is already a satire, which I think then clears you.
Oh yeah, just put Ding Fries Are Done in front of this.
Okay, you'll have to remind me.
We'll have commentated about it right after we play the song plus an hour and a half or however long it's been.
We are recording now, so we are effectively
talking about the satire about a song that we don't have the rights to, but that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Ding Fries Are Done. Which is probably
dang
super
offensive. Dang Fries Are Done? Is that what you're
saying? Oh, it's horrible.
Dank Fries Are Done? Dank. I would eat the shit out of it.
I don't know the real title to this fucking thing.
Ding. D-I-N-G.
Ding.
Fries are done. It is incredibly in poor taste.
I thought you were talking...
Yes, beyond in poor taste.
I thought it was a German name. All I heard was Dank Fries Are Done.
Dank Fries Are Done!
And then the more you said it, I was like, dang, the fries are done?
My fries are done! Get the fries out of the ovens. We use them for something else. Every time, Franz, I tell you to clean the ovens, they smell like that for days. Nobody likes the flavor of the French fries that come from those particular ovens. They taste like rye.
Oh, shit.
And people.
Oh, wow.
What? That's what Nazis used oven for.
We just lost our Jewish listeners.
We didn't before when I was talking about the kid that doesn't like the Jews. Like,
or when I jokingly said I hate Jews. Yeah. This is a Christmas episode anyway.
This is a Christmas episode, artist.
Not a motherfucking Hanukkah episode.
We'll do a Hanukkah.
Yeah,
Hanukkah.
Yeah,
whatever. God damn it, I'm laughing too hard.
This is almost as bad as the things Doyle said last episode.
Oh, God.
No, I don't think anything will be as bad as that. Doyle was on a fucking roll this episode.
Dude, he was like working on no sleep whatsoever. I'm like, those words shouldn't be coming out of your mouth. It's almost as bad as the comedian.
No, that guy was not funny.
Man. Do you think, does he listen to this show?
I have no idea.
Not anymore past this episode.
Oh, man. He apologized to me for taking the mic repeatedly.
You're like...
And I'm still like...
They call me aggro for a reason.
Like, look, I'm sure you're a nice guy when you're dead. No, I don't want him to die. I'm sure he's a nice
person. When your parents are crying over your grave.
I can't express to you how creepy that actually was.
That was fantastic.
We were making like really solid eye contact and like, when you're dead. I'm like, look down, look away.
He's so funny.
So I asked you to have an
old man
pick.
Yeah. So my old man picks more of a genre than anything else, which is also tipped off by your recent reading of Dune. It's 1960s classic science fiction. Shit is so good.
It is.
Read some Hyland, some Clark, some fucking...
Asimov.
What was it you were just reading?
Herbert.
Just fucking...
Donaldson's sci-fi stuff.
Good. Oh.
Like, what... The thing that I... This is what's fascinating to me about science fiction. Like, I don't read any modern science fiction, I don't think.
Neal Stephenson?
Yeah, I read Cryptonomicon, which was...
It's a little bit older.
Very large.
Yeah.
That took me a while to read. And I've read Tad Williams' Otherland series.
Christ,
and stuff like that.
Jesus.
Like, yeah, I pounded
it. That's a fucking library.
That
oh, no, I remember.
Pages. Yeah.
Ugh.
Modern science fiction is good, but I think it leans too heavily on, like, modern technology a lot of the times.
So yeah.
Whereas, like, 60s, 50s, and 60s science fiction, they're able to be so inventive about ideas and things that don't exist yet.
Well, and I think that was the big thing. And I've fallen off a little bit, but I think the biggest difference is between now and then, where then science fiction and it always is, but it was in service of the idea. What was the idea? What happens if you meet an alien people? What happens if you've got the three laws of robotics? Like, what are these concepts? And as a consequence, a lot of the characters tended to be fairly flat, which is one of the criticisms. Or, you know, it was the 60s, so they're incredibly misogynist, a.k.a. Dirty Man Heinlein, that kind of a thing. And I think as science fiction has progressed in the newer books, you end up with a lot more character-driven stuff. I'll point at, say, Seven Eves as an example of a book that started out with a cool idea, a.k.a. the moon crashes and what do you do, and then devolves into kind of a soap opera. You can tell I didn't really like this book a whole lot, where it becomes less about the ideas and more about the drama. I'd almost call it like the Lost effect. Like, the first season of Lost is about, holy shit, they're on this island with a polar bear and there's numbers and what the fuck is going on and all these great ideas. And then ends up in a – and then Jack had a prequel where he was thinking about this 13 minutes ago and becomes all about the people. In the same way, I think Walking Dead, the reason I don't like that show is
I'm
because –
I'm turning down your mic right now.
I know. Is that – you know, at the beginning, it's all about cool people surviving against the apocalypse and zombies and shit. And I really like that part. And then it devolves into – this is the same exact show if the problem were we ran out of – Oreos at the local corner store.
Like, or if there were sharks everywhere.
Or if there were sharks. Or any, yeah. It doesn't even fucking matter. It's just – there's nothing to reflect on. It's just a bunch of drama bitching. And I think that's kind of the difference where that fiction is moving. And obviously there's going to be, you know, outliers to that kind of a thing. But that's what I find.
Man, you must know a lot of people who love cookies.
Special.
You're
on a
fucking cookies.
I do. It's worse than
murder.
It's worse than the fries. But yeah, just that, just kind of the visionary thinking about those ideas and the particular flavor that it had. There's this strange flavor of like hope in them, I think, in a lot of cases that I like a lot. And obviously they were defining things at the time. I mean, you had had, you know, Jules Verne and, you know, things before that, but that 60s kind of era really started to take off with that speculative fiction stuff that I just think it was great.
And, well, and you know, I think it's really difficult to point to any kind of like science fiction that is anywhere near as definitive as like the Mars trilogy.
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Or like Dune, or
I think you saw it again with things like Burning Chrome or
like William Gibson's,
yeah,
stuff.
Gibson,
or like
stuff.
Ken Shirley's,
yeah,
books,
exactly.
And
when
like
that stuff came out, that gave us a whole new kind of I mean, that. You had things like Blade Runner that showed up out of that. So I think those were incredibly formative. But again, those were a different – those were more socially looking. Not that, you know, science fiction wasn't always a social – a way to look at social topics through a different lens. Like, what is an alien? Well, it's just a person whom you don't understand their culture, which is just a, you know, metaphor for you don't know who the black guy is down the street kind of a thing. So I don't know. But that's my – that's my old man thing of the time.
It's good.
Read yourself some Starship Troopers. Oh, here, my actual recommendation here, read Starship Troopers, which is Heinlein's pro-military, the movie is not – the movie is fucking fantastic, but has
but
nothing to do
not
with the
book.
Yeah. Is a super pro-nationalist, you know, pro-military kind of book, because that's the kind of guy Heinlein was. And then you read Jill Halderman's book called The Forever War, which was his response to having been in Vietnam, in also a person who is in armor as in a military. And so the settings are kind of similar, but the differences between those two.
They're like
read
two
the
sides
bookend
of a coin.
Those two books. They're fucking amazing. Jolt Halderman, holy shit.
I feel like I should just watch a movie about aliens.
That you're
that's
do that anyways.
That's
like,
an option.
Oh, that's right!
Never
holy
said
shit!
What?
No, we did.
What? Where now?
I thought we didn't say that we were going to watch Men in Black.
Oh,
we did.
I was at this moment where I was like, did we ever actually say what it was, or did we just yell about French fries and Holocaust ovens? Like,
come on
stop
down!
Bringing back the Holocaust ovens.
Come on down to Fritz's Holocaust fries.
Holocaust fries.
Side note: they have not changed their name.
What, Holocaust fries?
No, the other thinking outside the long box.
Shh.
They make me
the
mad.
Podcast that shall not be named.
The imposters.
Fakers.
Impostore.
I am talking to a lawyer, hopefully.
To accuse. Yeah,
to that podcast, I know a great comedian that would love
he would love to do like a 2 to 3 hour long interview with you about nothing.
That is the best.
Oh, man. So
around.
So my old man pick is actually something that I had not read until very recently, but it came out in like the 70s. So
my first big book?
Yeah. Pokey Little Puppy. No. Which incidentally is a super cute book.
Curious George?
I like Curious George.
Curious George and the Inappropriate Father?
By Curious George?
Yeah.
San Diego Comic-Con is paired with the Eisner Awards, which is effectively like the Oscars of the comic book industry. Those are named after Will Eisner, who created The Spirit, which was highly influential like in the detective comic book genre. Like, is a really, really big deal. So in the late 60s, early 70s, he got this idea that he wanted to create the graphic novel. And he's the guy that coined the term. Hmm. And he wanted to create a long-form story, like a novel, but done through, you know,
the
medium of comic books. So the book that he released is a book called Contract with God. Contract with God tells three, like, fairly serious stories about that all take place in this one part of New York. Called, I hope I'm going to say this right, but I think it's Dropsy Avenue.
Hood adjacent?
I want to say it's Dropsy Avenue. It is not hood adjacent. Ah. It is actually the hood.
Ah, duh.
But it takes place in like the kind of 20s, 30s, and 40s. And after that, he released a couple other books that take place in Dropsy Avenue that all tie together. And those have all been compiled into a giant sized book. It's like 500 pages long called The Contract with God Trilogy. Okay, so this is Will Eisner's kind of like crowning achievement, like artistically, writing-wise. You know, it was released as a novel, and there's stories about him going to bookstores, being like, hey, you guys got my book here? You know, like, I want to see where it's at.
Yeah.
And them going, well, it's in the back because we don't know where to put it. Like, does it go with the art books? Does it go with the novels? He's like, it's a graphic novel. It goes with the fucking novels. Like, like, so his idea was literally he wanted his book shelved next to classic literature,
or right,
modern, you know,
with
fiction
other
or
books,
whatever,
yeah,
other books. But, you know, it gave rise to this idea.
Those pages are filled with funnies.
Why are there cartoon pictures? But like the stories in this book deal with like really serious and like really interesting ideas. The title, A Contract with God, is taken from the first story where this guy literally takes a piece of paper and writes out a contract with God. I will do the things that you prescribe in the Bible if you give me success,
right,
and
right,
joy and all these things. And he has a daughter that, if I remember correctly, he adopts. Like, it's a little girl that he finds on the street. And then
that's not adoption.
Yeah, no.
No, I'm kidding.
He doesn't buy her. She's like abandoned. Wow.
That went dark.
Is it buying if he just used candy?
Get in the van.
Derailed. But
you're welcome.
She dies. And when she dies,
The candy?
Yes, from the candy. No, she dies of leukemia.
Jesus Christ.
No, she does. But he rejects.
Is leukemia the name of his dick?
No.
Or the candy she was fed.
He rejects his contract with God.
Right.
Like, you know, you didn't hold up your
end of this contract.
So I'm done. And he, like, goes on. He ends up being really wealthy because he, like, lets go of all, like, his religious persuasions. Like,
and just becomes
– He's a devout, like, Hasidic Jew. And he's just like, fuck it. I give up on all of that. I'm just going to pursue
wealth
money.
Here and the now.
Exactly.
And completely worldly.
And it just – it. He makes this hard transition. But then at the end of his life, he kind of tries to make this transition back.
Mm.
If I give up – it's a very much so a Christmas Carol
story. Yeah.
Like something really interesting, you know, and kind of impactful happens to him. So he goes to the rabbis and says, if you make me a contract with God that he's going to uphold, I will give you like this building and I will give you this stuff. And he ends up giving them all their wealth. And he's so excited to have this new contract with God that he has a heart attack and dies.
Huh.
Like, and that's just kind of the end of it, you know, and it's just – it takes these really serious ideas, these really powerful, like, you know, human and religious symbols, and puts them all together in a way that as a novel would probably work, but with Will Eisner's flair for, like, visual imagery and his ability
gives you another channel with which to pull that in.
Especially his very specific ability to draw people. Like, is it just makes that it this really, really powerful thing.
I might have to dip into that.
The last one is called, I think it's just called, you know, Life on Dropsy Avenue. And it literally tells the story of like Dropsy Avenue, like from the first Dutch people that are farming that land all the way through like the 20s and 30s and the guys that set fire to their buildings on purpose or like pulled all the copper out of them to sell
them. It's the story about the place, not a story about
the place instead of the people, but there are people intertwined through the whole thing. And it's just, it's so like evocatively and intelligently written that there's nothing you could call it besides a novel. Like, it is a novel just told through, you know, the
or just with an addition to this media
and pictures. Like, I had never had the opportunity to read this book before. Like, I mean, I'd seen it on shelves and I know who Will Eisner is. Right. I have a shitload of The Spirit. Like, I love that book. In spite of the occasional blackface, like, you know, I saw this book at the library. I checked it out. Ashton got to it before I did. He read the whole fucking book in like a day.
Wow.
Like 500 pages of it. Just
shoot it.
Sitting on the couch, page. Like, and Mel was like, wow, like, you really like that. He's all, this is amazing. So I'm excited that he gets to read it as like, you know, a young guy.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would have been really influential on like the things that I enjoyed and the things I was interested in if I would have read it at his age. But I read it over the last couple of weeks, and man, like, just what a fucking phenomenal and like powerful, just
amazing
book.
Piece
like,
of work.
It's just a really amazing piece of artistic achievement. Like, no wonder the Eisner Awards are named after him. You know, he inadvertently, I think, revolutionized like the comic
book
industry.
Would you call it the Citizen Kane?
I would call it the Citizen Kane of comic books.
Like, the gold standard of things,
yeah.
Some things that are worthwhile.
In all of these cases, everybody was trying to get a hold of a rosebud.
For the record, having seen Citizen Kane, it's not that great.
I haven't seen Citizen Kane.
It's long.
Citizen Kane is revolutionary for its place where it came, but you've seen everything people have done in that movie.
I've come in a lot of different places because it wasn't revolutionary.
No, it was revolutionary at the time.
Yeah.
Like, now it's old hat. Like,
now everybody just comes.
Yes, now everybody
just comes. Now there's no more plot. It's just straight to the jizzin.
It's no foreplay.
No, I do miss porn with plots. I like porn with plots.
As discussed in episode 69, as I recall.
Yeah, I like porn with a plot to it. It's funny. Helps me get in the spirit.
the holiday spirit?
There's cheerleaders
the
in this plot.
Spirit, that's right.
You eat that candy cane.
Yeah, good.
So minty.
Candy cane.
Ho, ho, ho.
That's how our last episode ends.
Now I have the chlamydia.
Really? Stop it.
There's going to be a lot of ho-ho-hos.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Because we were talking about how this is going to be the Christmas episode. Oh,
it
man.
Hasn't been
oh,
very man. Christmassy. Christmas it up, bitch.
Well, I should have picked a Christmas old man pick is what I should have done.
Yeah, you should have.
I didn't because
– ruined it.
Because
I never had good Christmases.
I didn't really have that great of Christmases. A lot of arguing.
That's my tamale? Like that kind of arguing?
No, the white family.
Oh, okay.
No, that part of Christmas was awesome.
Let's go get your cousin out of jail.
Mexican Christmas
brother,
was amazing.
Cousin?
It was go to grandma's house and eat until you passed out.
It's the best kind of Christmas.
Yeah, it is the best kind of Christmas. Do you have an old man pick?
Kind of. I am a little bit old, motherfucker.
You're
I'm
not
like,
old.
I know. I'm
dude,
only
he's
like
wearing
a
cardigan.
I'm wearing a cardigan and I'm cold. I'm wearing a cardigan and I'm cold as shit while Gabe's over there sweating.
It's always
I'm
so
not sweating.
It's always cold in this house, to be fair.
Yeah, my wife likes to keep the heat at a frosty 43.
Well, I'm like a lizard. I don't even like
sometimes,
operate until I'm
sometimes
at
the windows
degrees.
Are fucking open in the middle of winter. No.
So my old man pick or my young man pick?
Your middle-aged pick?
God, I fucking
no, I feel
hope
like
if
middle.
I die at 64, I'm going to be pissed.
Middle-aged.
I was talking to Bailey in the car a couple days ago, and she's all, I, you know, oh man, I'm so old. Like, I'm super sore today. And she's like, you're not that old. I'm like, Bailey, there's a really good chance I'm well past halfway.
Like, I have bad knees already. One of my hips is all fucked up. Like,
so on the opposite side of the coin you were talking about.
I'm the Iron Man here pretty soon.
Fantasy novels.
Mm.
So,
but with the boobs in them.
Not exactly. Well, yeah, I guess there's some boobs in some
on the
of
covers
them.
Mostly.
More specifically, Forgotten Realms. Because I was never too into D&D as a child. But I read a lot of those novels, like Dragonlance, ooh, like you've mentioned, Gabe.
Yeah,
and
I have a shitload
Forgotten
of
Realms.
I read lots of those.
I have the full run of the Dragonlance comic, too.
And then I think in like the 90s, Warhammer did their like Warhammer medieval novels. And I was on Facebook earlier, and we ended up talking about R.A. Salvatore, who's like the architect, in my opinion, of like the Forgotten Realms novels.
Absolutely, yeah.
And like, I can't think of like any Forgotten Realms novel that I've read or even own still to this day that he's not at least like editor on.
Right.
Like him and Ed Green, they like pretty much like created that universe, I feel.
So for me, it was Margaret
Weiss
Weiss
and Tracy Hickman. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I have so many books that have their name on the cover
of it. Oh, good Lord, yeah.
Like, see, I liked Forgotten Realms. Like, Elminster in Hell was amazing.
Yeah.
And, like, any of the Elminster stuff I really, really liked. But for me, Dragonlance was
the one that
my jam. Yeah. Tainus.
It's always weird for me because I came to those backwards. Like, I had had other fiction, and I'd come to that one, like, the other way around. Like, usually you sort of like intro on those and then you like move on to other stuff. And for me, I came out of the other way.
Right.
Same way for Tolkien. Like, I hadn't read Tolkien until I'd read a shit ton of stuff before that.
Right.
And then I got to there, I was like, oh, this is where all this shit came from. It's like when you watch that, like you watch Citizen Kane and you're like, oh, he's the one that decided how this was all going to be. And then it right. flows down from there.
Again, with the Citizen Kane.
I know. Now it's just a thing.
It's because it's the Citizen Kane of podcasts.
I hate Kane.
I definitely don't want to do Citizen Kane as a podcast.
No, God,
ever,
no.
Because that movie's boring.
We'll all just be sitting here like this.
Thumbs, I guess. Thumbs up my ass. This movie's
we'll bring the comedian back on for that episode.
Man.
We'll just make – just shovel shit.
That guy catches so much shit.
He's an okay guy, but man, has his situation not improved.
Wow. All right.
Dude, I feel bad for him.
That's awesome. I love Forgotten Realms. And like playing Dungeons & Dragons, Forgotten Realms I think was the de facto – place setting was Greyhawk.
Well, and that was,
I believe so.
That's another, the way I ran into those first is like we had played like the basic D&D, you know, the classic big red box, right? And so we had gotten a hold of this Forgotten Realms, or it's either way around. We got the red books after, but we had like one of the Forgotten Realms source books, and we, you know, my friends had all heard about D&D. So we're reading through the source book and we're like, this stuff is cool, but how do you play it,
right?
Because it's a source book, there are no instructions in that shit, and so we were just like mystified by this universe that existed, but we had no idea how to like get in and play the game that was that thing. So it was weird to kind of be like, here's this artifact out of nowhere with all this cool stuff we just didn't have context for.
Yeah, totally.
None of what you're talking about is cool, by the way. I almost fell asleep.
Hey, you remember that fire from earlier that I told Gabe to get in? You can share the warmth with him.
I think I'm about to receive a gift.
Uh-oh, here we go.
So we're going to
What's
open
in the
this.
Box?
Hey.
It's a troll.
And just a head.
Oh, it's the grumpy troll that changes
it's
colors
Branch.
That makes me cry.
Branch. That's
I know,
why
his name is Branch.
It for you, because it makes you cry.
Should I hang it up with my Dean Ambrose?
Yes.
Okay.
So we have an announcement to make that's a little bit of a sidebar.
You're pregnant.
Oh, fuck.
I already made that joke once today.
Let's be very, very clear. Let's, everybody out there.
Let's talk about fucking fires. Juan needs
this
to jump
shit
in.
Is this is out of business, okay?
I turned off the
Why
fire
did you point to your mouth?
Oh, hey, yo.
I'm
going to
my house.
She's about to make you have a face for radio.
That was so funny. All
right, so we have an announcement to make.
Oh, man, I'm scared.
So, the Butcher Bays has two new coaches. And their names are Lunchbox and Medusa.
Yeah, I saw that. Awesome.
Congratulations, you are the new coach.
Yay!
Yay!
Endurance kids.
Get out while you can.
Wake
now. Marriage is a trap.
One of the kids got
That's funny.
We started talking about fucking Dark Realm and shit, and I was just
Forgotten
like,
Realms, you dumbass.
You motherfucker.
Illiterate, fucking boiled dope piece of shit over
here. I like movies. I seen a book once.
Hey, fuck you. I read books.
What book?
The last book was the Sigler book that the I just read.
Yes.
And
which one?
I'm reading
it was
J-
an instructional
Alone. Yeah. And then I'm reading JR's book right now.
He does read a lot of right, books
let's
about
let them
wrestling.
Let's finish up this crap and want these dumb boys out of my house.
Wow.
Dumb boys.
Jesus. I love you too.
Fuck. After I just invited you to dinner. Okay. Shit.
That was earlier. Oh, come to my
what
house.
Are you doing?
I haven't seen you in months.
Eat all my burritos.
Eat all my burritos.
Call me pregnant twice.
Oh, yell about Jews.
I inquired to see if you were pregnant.
Say I take a lot of dicks to the mouth.
Because you told me.
No. Why don't you like the Jews, Steve?
I love the Jews. They're tasty.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Oh. We're gonna close the show with this.
Uh oh.
All right. In Japan, a restaurant has opened.
I can't believe we missed this topic. Holy
that
shit.
Serves human flesh.
Really?
Yes.
Like cracklins?
I don't know.
What they do is when you are dying, you can sign a contract with the restaurant to sell your body for meat.
Oh, man. I'm so going.
So human like fillet is upwards of like $11,000.
Wow.
Or something like that, you know.
What about chicharrones?
That's what I'm saying.
Can I get like the ground beef human, you know?
So like,
But once you when you sign the contract, the restaurant gives you a very strict
diet
regimen
that you have
to eat until your final days to tenderize your human flesh.
Oh, that's awesome. He was corn-fed, grass-finished.
Like Angus beef.
Yeah.
Yeah, they send somebody in and punch you every once in a while.
And I believe I believe there's like an infectious disease fucking thing.
Yeah,
right.
You gotta make sure prions or whatever.
Yeah, they pay you. So they pay
I'm dying
you
of syphilis. Can you
like
please feed me to other people?
$36,000 approximately.
Oh, wow.
For your body.
Like signing up?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, obviously, you're going to be dead, so you won't get that. But your family will get it, and then they can go eat you.
Dude, that's awesome.
Oh, would you want to eat your own family?
Weird,
no.
Dude.
No.
Who gets to eat my ass?
See, now, that's the other thing, though. Like, you got to think. So, if coming from like a slightly chef's perspective, like, you got to think. Like, so a cow has different cuts
exactly,
of meat,
depending upon where it does its
muscle,
work.
Different muscle structures have different textures.
Yep.
So,
your ass is just fat.
Do Asians get less money and black people get more money? Mira.
No, they just call them Peking.
This is
Peking
the
dick.
This is the black dick. It's fucking luxury.
And Bailey's out.
Problem with white people is that they're generally pretty flavorless. So
it all tastes like chicken.
They had a lot of bread in their life.
By the way, the people listening to the pod right now, this is not a fucking joke. This is a real thing.
A real thing.
And my interest is not fame. That's really interesting. Like it's protein, just like anything else. Like you're dead, you're fucking dead.
Are you gonna go home and rewrite your will with Sarah?
No, but I'm gonna go slice a piece off of her.
She gets
flesh of my flesh.
I'm pretty sure that's illegal.
When the contract says yes.
Yeah.
When I have to hand over my recorder.
So like what's interesting is there's been situations where like people that, you know, go to prison for like murder and that kind of thing, they actually have been with somebody that said, you know, I want to commit suicide and yes, you may eat me. Like that's something that has come up in the past. It's just what a weird thing.
Yeah.
Like only in Japan. Oh, what the fuck, Japan? Sorry,
so,
it's like the best segment in Hollywood Babylon.
Again, hardly Christmas-oriented.
That's another scene for our serial killer movie that we're going
to
do, that he doesn't know he's eating a person.
He's gone
remember,
to Japan.
You remember last episode where we're going to make the movie about the serial killer who always just happens to be in the weird
situation? In
situations,
the weird situation, yeah.
And everybody thinks he does all this shit.
And really, he's just some dude that's like, wait, no. Goddamn kid threw himself into a wood chipper.
Officer, these kids showed up. They just been killing themselves.
Oh, man. So, do we have one more episode between now and the year-end episode?
Yes.
Okay, so Men in Black is not our pop culture classic. I think we'll talk about all the pop culture classics that kind of in general that we've.
What are you talking about?
For the year-end episode.
Okay.
We'll talk
about. We don't normally have a pop culture. We don't have anything except for.
I was going to say, we'll talk about our favorites from the year as opposed to having one.
Correct.
So next episode, Men in Black. Please contact us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/thinkingoutsidethelongbox, or Instagram and Twitter at @outsidethelongbox. Send us an email at outsidethelongbox@gmail.com. Or call us on the Michael Kirk Memorial Hotline.
970-573-6148.
And leave us a message. Tell us what you think about Men in Black or anything that we've talked about, whether that be
condemning the assholes that were on the show today.
I know. If you feel the need to yell at us, totally fine.
Also, aggravated art loves all mail carriers. I'll be very clear about that.
Except for the motherfucking city carriers.
Yeah, no, except for those if you work for the post office, everyone knows it's the supervision that does not work.
Yeah. The supervision?
Vagin.
Is that what she said?
Vagin?
The supervagin?
Well, they might as well.
Wait, tell me more about this supervagin.
Supervagin? I need to go home and talk to my wife about this super vagine.
It's a lot like Goku and the super going super saiyan. Exactly.
Oh, sorry.
It powers
you're
out. Up.
It doesn't matter. It just powers up for 37 episodes and then does nothing.
That's the best.
It's not the best.
Powering up for 37 is the best.
It's like me.
I've been 37. I don't think I was powered up during that entire year.
If you liked anything about this podcast,
I don't know if that's more condemnation on your wife. Or?
No, that's me.
If you like anything about this podcast, which at this point in this episode seems like a stretch,
you super Christmassy episode.
For a Christmas episode, we have effectively offended every demographic.
Literally every demographic.
I'd also like
except
to remind
the
people.
I mean, Donald Trump does a good job of that already.
That if you're going to helicopter, you need to stretch first.
Oh, sure. Definitely stretch it out
can
first.
Can you sprain a penis?
Oh, without question. You can break a penis.
Oh, yeah. I've bent it before. It's not fun.
When you slide out by accident and you just bam right into the thigh.
That was his first anal experience.
No, it wasn't. That's the worst.
Wrong hole.
It's like, I'm done. But you didn't. I don't care. Yeah. I'm going to just
Mel
lay
was
here.
Like, yeah, that was an accident. Sure.
But
wait,
if
who's
like,
fucking who in that situation?
Yes.
Yes, you'd be amazed what
it's
happened.
It's in the shoebox, bro. It's in the shoebox.
So you can support us by buying all of your Christmas gifts. No Hanukkah gifts, no Kwanzaa gifts, just fucking Christmas gifts.
Wow.
Because this is a Christmas episode.
Oh, okay. Or you I don't even know when we would have done a Hanukkah. I don't even know when Kwanzaa is.
They're all at the same time.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Happy holidays!
I think Ramadan is at the same time this year, too.
Who celebrates Ramadan?
Muslims.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Read some books.
God, you xenophobe Jim piece Ross. Of shit.
I'm not a Muslim. I'm sorry.
You're not an anything.
I'm not a Jew. I don't know when Hanukkah starts. I'm sorry.
Those eight crazy nights.
That's a good song.
Anyway, you can do all of your holiday shopping at Amazon.com or .Amazon.
Don't fuck that up
again.
I'm
not. I'm fixing it right now. Amazon.totlb.com. It works exactly the same way as regular Amazon does. It just gives us like a little kickback. Hopefully this episode in the show notes, anything that the two pop culture classics that we talked about, we should... Yeah, and Tupac.
If you want to buy Tupac's album.
Yeah, you can. Absolutely. Yeah.
Amazon.totlb.com. I said it wrong, too.
I know. Jackass. But anyways, we should have links to the two pop culture classics that you can buy like through our website. You know, I'm sure it gives us like 4 cents or something like that, but it helps the show out. And you can also visit us at Patreon, patreon.com/totlb. And you can support us on Patreon like Steven does.
Indeed.
He's questioning that right now. I can see it in his eyes.
I was on the show and all I got was a stupid hat.
And you didn't even get it yet.
Hold on. Oh, you can watch all of their sweet exclusive videos.
There's about to be a Christmas miracle.
Oh, stickers. But you can go to Patreon. You can get hats, shirts, stickers, exclusive videos that will come out more.
Sexual contract with Gabe.
Yes, you can probably win that, I'm assuming.
I don't think that's a win.
I think that's a lose.
That's a lose.
It's a charity in the most charitable of ways.
Ask my wife. She's like, yeah, I put up with it.
Also follow the TOTLB YouTube.
Yes,
right?
Which is that. Which you go to YouTube.com.
We still need 100 different subscribers.
No, we don't. We go to YouTube.com and then you search for Thinking Outside the Long Box. Once we have 100 subscribers, we can rename it. But yeah, as
otherwise, it's JKL2493862828.
Hashtag at sign, pound sign.
Slash underscore backslash.
I just said hashtag and pound sign.
I just noticed we had 3 copyright claims against us.
Really?
Like, not like against us, but our 3 of our videos have copyright shit in them, but we're allowed to use them without monetizing them. One of them obviously is the Arms of an Angel Patreon, the video we just did.
Oh, right. Oh. So dumb.
But we're allowed to use it. They didn't take it down. The other one was our highest viewed YouTube video that we have, which is the Strippogram. Because he was playing the
song in the middle.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so annoying.
It gets weird. The YouTube will do that to you guys eventually, too, at some point.
So we only need 75 more subscribers to get to the 100, which is actually...
Is Mel a subscriber?
No, she doesn't watch stuff
on YouTube.
And she doesn't like
She subscribes IRL.
Shit I buy on Amazon for you fuckheads?
Yeah.
I'm not subscribing to shit. I let you in my house and eat my food.
Wow, we love so much anger.
She doesn't like you.
Okay.
Talk about Christmas. All right, Jesus.
I'm sorry.
She doesn't like Spanish people.
You don't like Jews.
Now we've offended
Who
everyone.
Said I don't like Jews? That was him.
I love Jews.
And they're delicious.
I'm going to Japan to get some. You know why? I only eat kosher humans.
See?
Oh, fuck.
That is not Juan, Gabe, or John, the affiliated parties of this fucking show.
I've said horrible things today.
Shut up.
I've been peppering those in throughout the episode for Juan, so you're all right.
Juan keeps passing me notes and saying, read this.
I don't know. I don't understand. He says, this isn't my opinion, but I need you to say this. But if you want more of this, you can go to patreon.com/TOTLB. And genuinely, it helps us. You know, we would love to get another soundboard because it'd be nice to be able to have more channels so that we can have more people sit on in the episodes.
No, because then we'd have to invite them to your house and Mel would not
be
happy.
We would just do it when we're in Parker. Anyway, there's a billion different things that we could use help with. So yes.
I heard boobs. What's going on, boobs?
Follow and subscribe to this shit. Somebody left you guys a comment saying you guys were better than the I Sell Comics podcast.
Yeah.
We know you're out there. Follow and subscribe.
Wow, that was sensual.
And dick swinging content.
Well,
And thinking outside the long box.
After hours.
We need to thank our interview.
This has been the longest outro.
I'd like to I'd like to thank Scott Fuzzy Joseph. He likes to add the nickname in there. I think because Fuzzy his Joseph. Name is probably pretty. If you type in Scott Joseph, I think a few billion people come up. His comic book, The Warrant Hope, is so. Having read the first 5 issues. I really like the ideas behind it, and I really like the direction that he's taking it. It's definitely worth checking out. So be sure to look him up.
And you like Poof Op. Poop. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I do like Poop Office.
I thought you were done. Sorry.
No, I do like Poop Office. I'm getting there. We'll talk more about it next episode. Like, I want to finish it before I say too much about Poop Office. So,
Poop Office, if you're listening, please send Aggravated Artist one of your poop plushies.
Poop plushie.
They do. They have little, like, poop-shaped plushies, and they're
adorable.
I'll
reach out to them. I'll reach out.
No,
to
not
that.
Like a poop emoji.
Not
plushie.
An emoji.
Like it's just like a log.
It's a fucking turd.
They're turds. Log. Like literally, Poop Office is like Dilbert, but They're all poop. So anyway, we've talked about that on the show already. Anyway, so this has been a very spectacular Christmas special where we talked about two Christmas movies and fucking nothing else that has anything to do with Christmas. So
don't fucking – you're going to be surprised how fucking Christmassy I make this fucking episode.
Oh, my God.
Are you just going to play Christmas every time I'm speaking?
Just low-key drop
it. You know what you should do is every time he says the word Jew, just cut it out and go Christmas. With that said, this has been episode 76 of Thinking Outside the Long Box. I'm Gabe.
Come on.
I'm Tim.
I'm also Gabe.
I'm Steven.
God damn it.
Oh, one last thing before we stop. Be sure to go to iTunes.
No, I'm stopping now.
No, go to iTunes or Stitchers or wherever it is
Stitchers?
That you...
There's Stitchers? Only one Stitcher.
Shut up. Let me finish so you can stop this.
It's another
go to iTunes
kind of
or
thing.
Stitcher. Anywhere that you get your podcast, give us a review. It helps us get
yes,
more
please.
Subscribers. We'd
send
love
me
to...
emails.
Yeah.
Subscribe, like,
send
and follow.
Send me tit pics, dit pics.
Show me your mom.
What's a dit pic?
We will suck your dick for a cheeseburger.
Oh, wow. We, wow. Again, jeez. That's Steve Merriman.
Not GOTOB and not aggravated artist.
If you're his employer, be kind.
I mean, I'll talk about, you know, having dicks sucked while eating cheeseburgers, but I'm not going to do one of those with you.
That's not what he told me.
Remember, aggravated artist hates mail carriers.
Feedback. Feed me. Feed me feedback. Feedback. Feedback.
Hey guys, hey, this is Jonathan Blackshear with The Lamp Show. Hey, I don't know if you heard my last message. I got in a little bit of trouble. I'm calling you guys, calling you from jail. They got me locked up. They think I was part of this cult that was trying to take over the world or something, and it's not true. We just wanted people to discover the wonders of comfortable wear. You know, robes and footwear and things like that, you know, sandals. But nonetheless, they put me in prison now. So, I really need you guys' help. This is my one phone call. So I was hoping, you'll put my message on the air and, that way, my wife will know where I am and, maybe my lawyer might hear too. So I don't know if you could at least put this on the air and then, see if my lawyer, Lou, your case for you. Yeah, Lou's your case for you is his name, Esquire. And just get him to find me in prison. And then if you can, I just finished episode 8. Don't ask me how I smuggled it in here with me. But check that out online. And just try and get him quick for me, okay? Thanks, guys.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Barron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barron Space production.